It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 25th day of April, 2024. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round, where if you do pop into the aforementioned merry, wacky, zany right now, you'll be greeted by Irish Dave and Ralphs and Squeaky and Theo. And, well, I'm there too. Hi, I'm Robin. And it is Thorn in the Side Thursday, and oh my goodness gracious, I have a feeling we're going to be talking about what went on today for a while. The bottom line, I mean, way back in the day when I used to do real live, no kidding, honest to God journalism, you could spend a substantial amount of time trying to decide what the lead to your story would be. You know, something to grab attention, something to catch an eye or an ear. When I started doing network radio news, one of the first things I learned was that on a typical top-of-the-hour, 5-minute newscast, people caught about the first 20 seconds, and then if you asked them about what happened after that, well, I don't know. And so I've actually spent a considerable amount of time trying to figure out something catchy, something punchy, some sort of almost haiku-like statement to deal with what I presume most of us heard earlier today. And it's not that I couldn't come up with anything. I came up with everything. But in the final analysis, what really struck me was that we may have been witness today, at least via audio, to the most momentous day in American jurisprudence since the ratification of the Constitution. Another thing that occurred to me was that if our most puissant dread sovereign supreme Catholic majesties fuck this one up, we are 4 minutes and 52 seconds into the program before I got my first F-bomb. But if they do, it will be a fuck up that will be the worst. And there have been a lot of bad ones. But it'll be the worst supreme fuck up since the Dred Scott decision. And in terms of the overall well-being of the Republic, possibly the worst ever. I came away, and maybe some of y'all did too. I came away from the listening to the hearing today thinking that our republic is in grave danger. Grave danger. And so as we go about the business of talking about this, it did occur to me to state that, or say, suggest, that if anybody wants to participate in a group discussion about this, we can do a side porch, thorn in the side Thursday conversation. I don't know if anybody will be up for that, though. It was almost 3 hours long, which says a little bit in its own right about the gravity of the proceedings. Jack Hacksaw Sauer, God, he was hard to listen to, not just because of the content, got the first bite of the apple and answered questions and yammered on for, what, about a half an hour? And then the next two were taken up with Counselor Dreeben representing the special prosecutor, Jack Smith, and all manner of commentary and questions from the 9 Supreme Court justices. By the way, one of the first questions, I believe, for Counselor Dreeben came from, well, Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas, who, if you recall or have heard yesterday's program, is still in the running for being co-conspirator number 6. And if, in fact, Jinjin is co-conspirator number 6, it might explain some of the motivations of certain members among our most puissant Dread Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties. So all afternoon I've been trying to organize my thoughts at the same time that I was trying to pay attention to other things going on in the world. But I did. I came away shaken. I was raised by parents who themselves were teens and early 20-somethings during the Second World War. They told me stories of what it was like both to be in the war and to be on the home front, which itself was a form of war. My mom told me about ration books and war bonds and blackout curtains in case the Germans or the Japanese decided to bomb Anstead, West Virginia. And as I have remarked in other broadcasts, my generation wasn't asked for much. I think I mentioned a few nights ago that in the immediate aftermath of September 11th, 2001, George W. Bush, dim leader, raisin brain, as Malloy called him, told us that we must do our patriotic duty and go shopping, get on planes, and fly to Disney World, or else the terrorists would win. It didn't make me feel too terribly heroic. I can almost hear Scott talking about, the Kennedy assassination, Watergate. I thought about being a kid and watching the moon landing in 1969. But I swear to Pete, I did not have Fall of the Republic on my bingo card for my later life. And in the immortal words of a dear friend of mine from Southern West Virginia, God damn it, that just about beats cats fucking. And it does. Right off the bat, I knew I got a sense for how things were going to go when one of the justices, I don't recall immediately which one it was, but one of the justices offered Hacksaw Sour, Hacksaw Jack Sour, the opportunity to walk back one of the more outrageous moments from the oral arguments before the United States Circuit Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, asking him, are you still of the opinion that the President of the United States has the untrammeled power to order the assassination of a political rival? To order a coup against the government of the United States of America? Well, give Hacksaw Jack credit for consistency, I guess. Because he said, yes, I do. So the sides were pretty clearly drawn. Terrifyingly drawn, I might add. And I read a lot of analysis from the multimillionaire for-profit media, CNN, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, New York Times, and it was all fairly consistent analysis. But it didn't exactly leave me comforted. And it was only toward the end of the hearing that I realized that they were looking for a way, if they couldn't just outright grant Nitwit Nero blanket immunity to be maximum dictator for life, that they could at least string the process along. Subject line, Supremes, Matt in San Francisco says, I've only heard snippets of the oral arguments regarding presidential immunity, but seriously, what the fuck was all that bullshit about? To me, it seemed like arguing with a person in the middle of a manic episode. Depends on which person, Matt. If you're talking about Hacksaw Jack, yeah. I thought Counselor Dreeben was methodical, logical, fair. He was candid with the court. And the conclusions that appear to have at least been gestated today lead to uncertain or a sense of uncertainty or downright unease. I don't know what it felt like the night before the artillery opened up on Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor. I don't know what it felt like on December the 6th, 1941. I remember how anodyne it was on the 10th of September, 2001. I was too little to recall what November the 21st, 1963 was like. But those are all forms of a before time. And on the next day, what came after forever altered reality. No, there were no guns or bombs today. But there were, well, let's just go ahead and go there. This felt like the night before the Ides of March, 44 BCE. Folks just sitting around, laying around. The Romans dined on couches. Propped up on an elbow and picking up little lark's vomit canapes and hummingbird tongue, lady fingers, and whatnot. And on that particular evening, having a conversation, the symposium question having been formulated as, what is the best way to die? And when it came Caesar's turn, Caesar said, it matters not the method, as long as it be quick. Because it's not about being dead. It's about how you get there. There's peacefully passing in one's sleep, and then there's, being stabbed 30 or 40 times and dying really slowly in profound agony. And more than anything else, that was the foreboding sense that I got from today. And I find myself surprised, and of course we had the clip in yesterday's program from the Idaho arguments, in which I found myself mildly surprised at the conduct of the handmaid. And today I found myself actually, surprise, 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 Sergeant Carter, being pleasantly amazed, at least with her conduct during the hearing, the argument. Because it would seem that there are at least four votes. Curiously enough, they're all women. Who were having none of Hacksaw Jack and, by extension, his boss, Nitwit Nero's bullshit. But they're still outnumbered 5-4. We'll go into the details in a moment, but I got ahead of myself. Every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. And this program is no different. And so consequently, we say thank you to our PayPal subscribers for the 25th day of the month. And that means thank you so much to Peter, and thank you to Mark. I got some of the power bill paid yesterday, so that keeps that lupine pest at least off the bottom step of the porch. Thanks, y'all. Fundraising goal to finish April, fully funded, is at $1,800. That would mean today, tomorrow, Monday, and Tuesday, we need to raise... in excess of $400. If anybody wants to help out, we virtually passed the hat over at headon.live, and there's a PayPal button there. It would be extremely helpful because there are breathtaking bills yet to be addressed. But to get into the meat of things, I noticed some, let's say, snake Easter eggs tucked away in the arguments today, in the comments, especially from some of our most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties. One of which was the discussion about statutory immunity. Well, thank you, Steve. Steve in New York said, sorry I can't do more, but put me down for a $10 challenge. If someone will kindly meet Steve's 10, well, we'll be down under 1,800 bucks. We'll be down to 1,780, but somebody's got to pony up the 10 before Steve does. But then Steve will. Thank you, Steve. I'll be interested to get your thoughts as we go through this discussion. No, snake Easter eggs. At one point in time, during colloquy between court and counsel, the question was put forward, or the issue was put forward, that a president should be, must be named specifically vis-a-vis being president in order for a statute to apply to him. And there was much harumphing. I mean, the bottom line is, I sincerely do not have much respect for this Supreme Court as it is presently constituted. There are at least three illegitimate members thereof. I'm talking about Ann's boy, Neil. Beer boofing, brat. And, of course, the handmaid, who, to a certain extent, may yet be trying to redeem herself. That jury is still out. But when the remark was made that it would be rather ludicrous to suggest that every statute Congress passes that has a criminal penalty would have to specifically reference the President of the United States, there was a fair degree of poo-pooing, of the concept. But it made my spidey sense tingle something fierce. No, Lee, it's not allergies. That's a different tingling and sneezing. Yeah, it'd be silly if, say, there was a federal murder statute, and to make the President of the United States criminally liable for committing the crime of murder would have to specifically mention the President of the United States. That's just dumb, isn't it? Now, there's only one problem. You know, the news cycle is about 15 milliseconds long now. I saw it in action today. There was about an hour's worth of panel discussion on MSNBC, and the next thing you know, they're talking, well, they've moved into the Pecker Report. You didn't think I was going to avoid an opportunity to refer to something as the Pecker Report, did you? With much doing and pontificating about the effects, and we'll probably get into that too, of the testimony of Mr. Pecker in Nitwit Nero's criminal trial in New York. I was like, wow, that was fast. But again, I checked out a lot of analysis and I didn't catch anybody bringing this up, but when they said that, you know, it'd be dumb to have to name the president specifically in every statute that had a criminal criminal liability or liability for criminal conduct, again, something there was an itch it took me a minute to scratch. But then it dawned on me. They'd already done that, y'all. The Supreme Court has already made that holding. No, it wasn't about criminal liability, and no, it was not about a statute. It was about an actual amendment to the Constitution, and by definition, an amendment to the Constitution becomes a part of the Constitution. Any of this ringing familiar at all? Because it's about a month old. And the snake has been coiled in its cradle, waiting to strike. And they say that the venom of a baby pit viper is much more deadly than that of an adult because the baby can't control how much poison it pumps out when it strikes. And there was a lot of poison here. Because it was a month or so ago, remember? When our most puissant, dread sovereign, supreme Catholic majesties said that no, Nitwit Nero could not be removed from the ballot in Colorado under the 14th Amendment because that section of the 14th Amendment did not specifically mention the President of the United States being removed from ballots. Steve remembers, it was the 14th Amendment, Congress must act, fucking bullshit. Odd that 14th Amendment BS and this immunity garbage somehow seem connected. Isn't it just? That's exactly what it was, Steve. Congress must act. And you might recall that, again, faced with that statement from the dude bros on the court, the ladies on the court said, well, this is hogwash. Sonia Sotomayor, Elena Kagan, and Ketanji Brown Jackson were unequivocal in their condemnation of that attempt at reasoning, while the handmaid stepped in and said, well, I rather agree, but I wish you'd been nicer about it. There's enough incivility around here as it is. See, we can destroy a republic, but it would just be, well, wrong if the people who objected to the destruction were strident about their objection. But what they were whining about has already happened. I think Steve's in agreement with me. I don't know what Billable Rick's up to right now. We're gonna try to save your snack from any potential insult whenever you get around to that, Billable. But if you disagree, please chime in. Darlene, you've had a cup of coffee in law school. But I haven't seen any mention of this in the for-profit media, and I just kind of wonder why? Was it really odd, Steve? Or coincidence? Or was it part of the plan? As we said in our opinion on whatever the style of the case was, I can't recall. So-and-so versus Colorado. In order for a statute or an amendment or a constitutional provision to be applicable to the president, Congress must act and make it applicable to the president. Randy Radar with a question. So the current POTUS could potentially kill SCOTUS members and get away with it? Maybe, you know, Randy Radar, that maybe that's how they should have phrased it. Counselor, are you suggesting the President of the United States could order SEAL Team 6 to come in here and take out, say, two or three members of the court so that he could then appoint new members of the court? And there would be no remedy for it? Maybe that would have driven the point home, because sometimes these ideologues on the right wing of the court, the fascist phalange of the court, seem deliberately obtuse, deliberately dumb, playing dumb. It honestly kind of felt that way. I really would be interested to know your thoughts. Steve in New York just said, this is making entirely too much sense. After you just read my email and I heard it out loud, literally a chill ran down my spine and my breathing became slightly more labored. Robin, is my brain being crazy for thinking we're seeing these monsters cloaking the destruction of the Republic in the mantle of law? That's awfully elegantly worded, Steve. But I think that that footpad treason has perhaps found a home in the hearts of some of the worst of the members of the court. You know, Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Fappy Thomas, Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch, Sammy Bad Breath, Beer Boof and Brat. Some of them weren't cloaking, though. They weren't mantling. Sammy Bad Breath comes immediately to mind. In a colloquy with Michael Dreeben, Sammy Bad Breath made it abundantly clear that he thinks his orange god emperor is, well, special.
Well, Mr. Dreeben, do you really, I mean, presidents have to make a lot of tough decisions about enforcing the law, and they have to make decisions about questions that are unsettled, and they have to make decisions based on the information that's available. Do you really, did I understand you to say, well, you know, if he makes a mistake, he makes a mistake, he's subject to the criminal laws just like anybody else? You don't think he's in a special, a peculiarly precarious position?
He's in a special position for a number of reasons. One is that he has access to legal advice about everything that he does. He's under a constitutional obligation to, he's supposed to be faithful to the laws of the United States and the Constitution of the United States. And making a mistake is not what lands you in a criminal prosecution. There's been some talk about the statutes that are issue in this case. I think they are fairly described as malum in se statutes, engaging in conspiracies to defraud the United States with respect to one of the most important functions, namely the certification of the next president.
Well, I don't want to dispute the particular application of that, of 371, conspiracy to defraud the United States, to the particular facts here. But would you not agree that that is a peculiarly open-ended statutory prohibition, in that fraud under that provision, unlike under most other fraud provisions, does not have to do, doesn't require any impairment of a property interest?
It's designed to protect the functions of the United States government, and it's difficult to think of a more critical function than the certification of who won the election.
Yeah, I'm not discussing the particular facts of this case, but it applies to any fraud that interferes seriously with any government operation, right?
So what the government needs to show is an intent to impede, interfere, or defeat a lawful government function by deception, and it has to be done with scienter. These are not the kinds of activities that I think any of us would think a president needs to engage in order to fulfill his Article II duties, and particularly in a case like this one. I want to pick up on something that the court said earlier about the distinction between a public official acting to achieve public ends and a public official acting to achieve private ends. As applied to this case, the president has no functions with respect to the certification of the winner of the presidential election. It seems likely that the framers designed the Constitution that way because at the time of the founding, presidents had no two-term limit. They could run again and again, and were expected potentially to want to do that. So the potential for self-interest would explain why the states conduct the elections. They send electors to certify who won those elections and to provide votes. And then Congress, in a extraordinary joint session, certifies the vote.
See what I mean about Michael Dreeben being ready? Or hear what I mean? But the bottom line there is that Sammy Bad Breath desperately wanted to find a way out for his God Emperor. So it sounds to me like that's one vote for immunity. And where Sammy Bad Breath goes, Fappy follows, you know, in his Man of the People RV, crooked bastards. There were parts of this argument that were terrifying to hear. So let's take a quick gander at how this could all play out, because the whodunit portion of the program came toward the end of the arguments. And they came via old balls and strikes. John Roberts. Who asked, fairly simply, or it seemed simple at the time, whether the appeals court ruling could be trusted, saying that D.C. Circuit's February ruling, a former president can be prosecuted because he's being prosecuted, and he said that was circular in nature, referred to it as a tautology. You don't want to be accused of a tautology in any court, much less the Supreme Court of the United States. Of course, it's not what the member, the three-judge panel of the D.C. Circuit said. But eventually, they thought, they began to discuss how they might potentially rule. And one of the things that they thought they might do would be, instead of actually doing their damn jobs, and understand this is often a preferred methodology for the court, instead of just doing their damn jobs and issuing a ruling and saying, alea iacta est to Judge Chutkan in D.C., that they would say something and remand it to the court below to reevaluate and re-rule in accordance with what they had said. It's the ultimate kicking the can down the road. There is only one right answer in this case. And the right answer is that Nitwit Nero is liable for does not have immunity for what he did. There were numerous references, and a lot of air was consumed over the question of personal versus official acts. Mr. Dreeben, I feel certain it was Mr. Dreeben noting, or maybe it was Hacksaw Jack, that the president is specifically mentioned in terms of official acts only in the veto and the ability to recognize and engage in diplomacy with foreign nations. The discussion of the bribery statute was on a par with those medieval divines pondering the number of angels that could dance on the head of a pin, that a president might only be liable for bribery if he offered the bribe from inside a government structure. Wow. But here's the, I think, I'm terrified, actually, the word I'm looking for is terrified, that they will cobble together a majority to say, well, you know, okay, he is immune for this, but not immune for that, and we remand to the court below for a ruling consistent with what we have here today stated. If they issued that ruling next week, or 2 weeks from now, the court below would have a chance to act in accordance with their ruling. And then theoretically, Judge Chutkan could get busy. The real metric for how thoroughly the fix is in, how much of a boat race this is all about timing. We talked about this in the past. The last day of the present term of this court will fall on Friday, the 28th day of June, 2024. If this ruling comes out anywhere between the 24th and 28th day of June, we will know the fix is in. And if that ruling is a remand, then we'll know that it's more than just a fix, that somewhere along the way, someone has been purchased. Oh, wait, we already know that. Clarence Pubes on the Coke can Fappy Thomas. Well, we identified him months ago as the world's most well-known human timeshare, with Har Har and Lee Lee owning him off and on throughout any given year. I hope I'm presenting this in a cogent and comprehensible fashion. What happens if they issue that kind of a ruling on the 28th day of June, or between the 25th and the 28th, 24th and the 28th, then the same thing I described, if the ruling comes out in three weeks, will obtain. It'll have to go down to the circuit court. The circuit court of appeals will rule consistent with their mandate. Ah, but then what happens after the circuit court rules? Well, in the best of all possible worlds, Judge Chutkan would then say, all right, let's get started. Both sides have 3 months to prepare for trial, although both sides have been preparing for trial for months already now. And 3 months from the end of June is July, August, and September. That means the trial would commence with the beginning of October. The trial has been posited to be 6 to 8 weeks long. That means the trial is still going on at the time of the November presidential election. And that's if it's the best of all possible worlds. Voltaire notwithstanding, that ain't where we live. Because if whatever the ruling is, Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers will appeal it back to the Supreme Court. And we will lather, rinse, repeat. If you'd like a picture of what this looks like, consider the ruling last year about House redistricting in Talabama. The Supreme Court said, Talabama, you're wrong. You have to redistrict in accordance with the rules as they've been established by the court below. The state of Talabama said, nuh-uh, we don't. And just did nothing for months on end. Essentially saying to the Supreme Court of the United States what Andrew Jackson is said to have said, remarked upon the ruling regarding, I think, the Indian Removal Act. Mr. Marshall has made his ruling. Now let him enforce it. Do we all begin to see how desperately awful this could get? How slowly? Oh, by the way, I said the trial, under the best of circumstances, within that fact pattern, would begin in October. Guess what else begins in October? The next term of the Supreme Court of the United States will begin on Monday, the 7th day of October 2024, making it ever more likely that his pettifoggers will run shrieking to them during an open term of court. I think it's abundantly clear that what at least four members of the court are hoping is that Nitwit Nero will be reelected and then take a real steaming dump on the Constitution by pardoning himself. Is it just me and my hysterical woman? Or is this as terrifying as I feel like it is? I don't feel hysterical. By the end of the arguments, I did, however, feel exhausted and fearful for the fate of the union. How about you? Should we talk about this? We're coming up on the end of the first hour of the program. And I feel like, yeah, maybe. So, you know, the Skype line is open. Robin, R-O-B-Y-N, Kincaid Horn, K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. That's the contact on Skype. If you've never Skyped in before, send me a friend request and we'll get right to it. The stress line, of course, 844-843-4676. And, of course, as ever here, it's first come, first talked. Kevin in Colorado Springs, turning the Republic into... And Kevin asks, could this not be a bloodless coup to turn a Democratic Republic into a monarchy? Oh, a monarchy. Well... Some might argue a monarchy would not be as bad as what it actually would turn it into, Kevin. And that is an outright totalitarian dictatorship. I just saw a story come across my feed from The Atlantic. The Supreme Court goes through the looking glass on presidential immunity. And David A. Graham begins his article with, here are a few things that Donald Trump's lawyer says a president ought to be immune from prosecution for doing. Selling nuclear secrets, employing the U.S. military to assassinate a political rival, and launching a coup. And notes that Hacksaw Jack said that all three of those actions could be understood as an official act of the president and that no current or former president may be charged with crimes for doing them. Hacksaw Jack at the very beginning of it all said, without him, honest to God, if I hadn't known who I was listening to, I would have thought that Alex Jones was presenting an argument before the Supreme Court of the United States. Without immunity from criminal prosecution, there can be no presidency as we know it. With that in mind... Well, oh, where'd it go? Yeah, it's worth noting that over on the website that used to be known as Twitter, Judge Ludig, who has become Michael Ludig, a Federalist Society member, a deeply conservative member of the federal bench, retired, an appellate judge, was unsparing in his critique. As with the three-hour argument in Trump v. Anderson, a disconcertingly precious little of the two-hour argument today was even devoted to the specific and only question presented for decision. Namely, whether a former president of the United States may be prosecuted for attempting to remain in power, notwithstanding the election of his successor by the American people, thereby also depriving his lawfully elected successor of the powers of the presidency to which that successor became entitled upon his rightful election by the American people, and preventing the peaceful transfer of power for the first time in American history. He went on to say that the president has no, it plays no part in electoral certification. In fact, he said, the framers of the Constitution well understood the enormous potential for self-interested conflict were the president to have a role in these fundamental constitutional functions, and that's why they kept him out of it. Whether undertaken in his or her official candidate or personal capacity, a president of the United States has never been and can never be immune from prosecution after leaving office for having attempted to remain in power notwithstanding the election of that president's successor by the American people. Consequently, there is no reason whatsoever for the Supreme Court to remand to the lower courts for a determination of which of the alleged criminal acts might have been personal and which might have been official. He concluded saying it would be ludicrous to contend that the former president was not on sufficient notice that if he committed the criminal acts charged, he would be subject to criminal prosecution by the United States of America. To hold otherwise would make a mockery out of the plain statement rule. Now, the thing about all of that is that Judge Luttig is, well, he's why the modern conservative legal movement even exists. So it's not like an argument that's being presented by some wild-eyed liberal or a radical. But were I a betting woman, I would not blush to part with a fin over the question of whether what Judge Luttig described is exactly what these people will do, because they are at their most basic level cowards. Right-wingers always are. Fascists always are. Oh, they'll be bully boys if they think if it's an unfair fight. But if the playing field is level, well, assholes and elbows are all you'll see of them. As to Sammy Bad Breath, Steve in New York says that entire line of questioning from him was nothing but blather and bilge. There is nothing ambiguous or confusing about this. He's either being intentionally obtuse or he's just plain stupid. Oh, I think there's one more there, Steve. He's an outright fascist and he thinks he doesn't have to hide it anymore. Steve says, I think the intentionally obtuse is more likely. Whatever that rancid fascist is, he's not stupid. Well, see, we agree after all. You had Beer Boof and Brat Kavanaugh also blathering on, trying to admit the possibility of immunity, when he himself authored an opinion that the president is criminally liable. The difference being, of course, that he was saying that about Bill Clinton, whereas this is about nominally a Republican. I-O-K-I-Y-A-M, y'all. It's okay if you're a maggot. See how it works. I wish I didn't, kind of. Steve adds, is there any doubt now that this is nothing but a campaign to save Nitwit Nero's heavily diapered ass? Ramalama. First one of the evening. I think that's clearly what it is, at least from the defense side of things. The fact that some members of the court are such shameless tankies for him, well, it's not surprising. But it's nauseating to watch take place in real time. Lee in New York. Lee. Do you have to call him Lee? I hate hearing my name anywhere near Clarence's name. Just kidding. Everything's fine. Lee. Signed Lee without repetition in New York City. It's an unfortunate it's an unfortunate coincidence, Lee. I have a dear friend named Heather. And we talked at one point. She said, you know, sometimes I hate my name. Because Heather, like Karen, is become a name for being put upon to describe women who are assholes. And she is decidedly not. Oh, Todd, thank you for the kind words on the barbecue. That's very kind. A restaurant would be proud of that, but you're ready for the Western frontier. Delicious. Oh, we'll just stay right here in the hills, Todd. Todd adds, today in the Supremes, originalism. Congratulations to Jerry for making the wonderful observation of how an argument should be presented back to the Supremes. Would you please be able to explain the soundness of the originalism argument? No, because there's no soundness to the argument. Todd says, it seems to me that if logic would apply, amendments to the Constitution automatically prove in practice that the Constitution is malleable and flexible, as demonstrated by previous rulings and amendments. End of story. Seems like fascism is being courted by the... Ugh. Signed Todd. I know. Ugh. Yeah, Lee in New York. Monarchy? Donnie will not let that other daughter, Tiffany, rule the nation. You mean Tiffania? Yeah. Well, he barely acknowledges that, you know, she's his daughter. Wonder when the last time he talked with Tiffania on the phone was. Well, never mind. That's just petty. Oh, back to the Pecker Report, Christopher. Pecker Report? Is that with Tom Cruise? So I imagine the Pecker Report is much like the car portion of Consumer Reports. Which ones rise high above the rest and deserve consideration for a test run? Christopher. There really needs to be a clip from a couple of days ago of Mika just saying, Pecker, Pecker, Pecker. Obligatory Star Trek reference, Lou and PA, Ferengi Rule of Acquisition 109, dignity and an empty sack is worth the sack. Truth. Dave and the Blind with a note, should I prepare? Listening to the hearing today, I felt like I should prepare to request to be deported back to the United States, having been born in the United States and living in Talibandiana most of my life. I feel that the dictator that will be eventually needs to be informed that I'm here. I was born here, citizen, but need to be deported back to the United States. This is not my country. I don't have my head in the sand, but this is what happens when fascists take over. God help the Republic. God save the Republic. And God is a mighty thin reed to put one's hopes for the salvation of the Republic upon. Yeah. Okay. Ramalama, Steve, in New York. Ding dong. The Pecker Report. Rock hard journalism. Now here we are contemplating the end of the Republic, and Christopher and Steve, and, well, kind of me too. I guess I'm guilty, guilty, guilty. Trying to drag the Dagnant program into the gutter. I mentioned Sammy Bad Breath. He did not get what the folks in the theater trade would call good notice for his performance today. That one line from the clip I played. I'm not talking about the particular facts of this case. Oh. Over on the website that was formerly known as Twitter, University of Texas law professor Steve Vladek said, Justice Alito suggests that if former presidents are subject to prosecution after leaving office, they'll be more likely to seek to unlawfully remain in office after they were defeated for re-election. Their term has ended. Jesus fucking Christ. Ellie Mistal had a baby. Alito, I'm not talking about the particular facts of this case. Why? Why the hell are you not talking about this fucking case right in front of you? From the Financial Times, Ed Luce. That's such a charming posh accent. Talked to Ari Melber earlier today and said, Alito is implying that unless a president has immunity, his successors will persecute him. Did I just imagine that this has never happened in U.S. history? This is dark sophistry. Ooh, that's good. Dark sophistry. Almost sounds like it could be a Lady Gaga song. Bad romance, dark sophistry. Ari Melber said, chilling, Justice Alito seems to seriously suggest U.S. coups will be more likely if the prosecution of former presidents is legal, because then some would be incentivized to stage coups to avoid later prosecution. Ah, Jesus, do we really have to talk about ancient Rome? I guess we do. I guess we do. Because the prosecution of former consuls was ultimately what led to the fall of the Republic and the rise of the Empire. I'm not, you know, this is not history repeating itself or necessarily even rhyming, but that sort of thing did inform the framers of the Constitution. Of course, they had it kind of bass-ackwards. They thought Cato the Elder was a great guy, and that he stood for freedom and liberty. Sit, liberty, sit. But the fact of the matter is, by the time Caesar crossed the Rubicon, the entire reason that he crossed the Rubicon, starting yet another, or precipitating another Roman civil war, was specifically because his former father-in-law, Pompey Magnus, in conjunction with people like Cato the Younger. If I said Cato the Elder earlier, I apologize for the mistake. And Cicero and other patricians had decided that now that Caesar's war in Gaul was concluded, that he must disarm and come back to Rome, where they thoroughly intended to prosecute him. And at that time, when a consul was prosecuted and found guilty, oh, okay, Emilio, that's quality. Dark sophistry? I prefer milk sophistry. You people. Yes, I just you people, do you? But they were going to prosecute him, and when the consul was prosecuted, and it had happened within fairly recent memory, the prosecuted former consul would be banished, and the terminology for it was denied fire and water within X distance of Rome. And so in order not to be prosecuted, Caesar crossed the Rubicon. Well, we are not ancient Rome. This is a system that is dramatically different from that of the Romans, the Roman Republic. They, for instance, gave their consul only a year and made him serve alongside another consul, which often resulted in the two consuls being at each other's throats for the year. And in fact, during Caesar's consulship, his co-consul, in order to stop Caesar from enacting laws that the patricians didn't like, declared that the Senate could not meet because he had seen a bird flying from left to right through the window of the Senate, and retired to his digs to consider the auguries. We don't have any such structures in place. But that seems to be what Sammy Bad Breath was at least implying. Sorry, responding to an email. There we go. Let's see. Joel Ostro, a lawyer in Illinois. Alito just admitted he has no interest in discussing the particular facts of this case. And used the same language I just did. The fix is in. Former Associate White House Counsel Ian Bassan said, Alito is indicting a criminal justice system when it comes to Trump that he defends when it comes to every other criminal defendant. Such a bad faith actor. Barbara McQuaid over at MSNBC. Alito, skeptical of layers of protection in criminal justice system, projecting bad faith? Supreme Court, advice of AG, grand jury finding of probable cause. Alito, a former prosecutor of all people, says a grand jury can indict a ham sandwich, cynical, hypocritical, and wrong. And everybody was absolutely right in their condemnation of him. Of course, if it were not for Fappy Thomas, Sammy Bad Breath would be the single most corrupt member of the court. Salmon fishing, wasn't it? I think it was salmon fishing. And it's worth noting that at the same time that Hacksaw Jack was arguing that the president could have people murdered, foment a coup, sell secrets, it turns out that the FBI has been covering up an ongoing stalking of one of the people that Nitwit Nero most despises. The stalker is an ex-Marine named John C. Perez. He entered a guilty plea today to misdemeanor federal stalking. And as a result, he can't go near D.C. for 6 months. Water and fire. He lives in California, though. He has to go to therapy 6 times after his stalking. Who did he stalk? He stalked a woman named Lisa Page. You know, Lisa Page, who was dating Peter Strzok, who was a lawyer, and Lisa Page was a lawyer for the FBI. John C. Perez was discharged from the Marines after he fessed up that he was absolutely obsessed with Lisa Page and also obsessed with mass shootings. Now, the Marine Corps turned around and told the FBI all about it, but the FBI never said a word to Lisa Page. Not a word. The FBI said, you know, he's not a threat. A few months later, and he was hanging around outside Lisa Page's home. Lisa Page, of course, has been repeatedly attacked by Nitwit Nero. You know, in his typical MO of engaging in stochastic terrorism. Ms. Page is still in the process of suing Nitwit Nero. Perez wasn't a threat to her. Except for the fact that he went to her home at least 4 times just in the month of December. He went so far as to confront her and tell her that she had witnessed the sexual abuse that he suffered in childhood. Lisa Page, it probably goes without saying, but this is 2024 and you have to say it. Lisa Page had never so much as set eyes on John C. Perez. Lisa Page does, however, have an 11-year-old little boy. And Perez went so far as to speak to him. In court, Ms. Page said, the FBI knew about his fixation on me since September and they said nothing. 3 months later, he was on my doorstep. Wasn't it just a couple of days ago we were talking about the fact that the federal government settled for $139 million with the victims of Dr. Larry Nassar after an inspector general report indicated that the agents who were aware of the situation did absolutely not a damn thing? I think I also mentioned that the young women only sued after word came out that the FBI declared that it would not prosecute its own agents for their gross, willful, wanton negligence in the matter. Pardon me for thinking this way, but I wonder how many of those FBI agents were men. Pardon me for thinking this way, but I wonder how many of the FBI agents who ignored this issue with Ms. Page were men. The FBI is notorious for having right-wing authoritarians among its number, probably a majority. I wonder why on earth they would decide that a man who was stalking Lisa Page and hanging out outside her house wasn't a threat to her. Don't you just wonder? Because I do. And here we are, almost an hour and a half into the program. I neglected to mention, and thank you, Ralphs, for making it, a $25 challenge is on the table in honor of the birth of a litter of kittens by a tiny kitten named Hoshi. Thank you, Ralphs. So that makes $35 on the table, which could turn into $70 if someone would be so kind as to, or someone's would be so kind as to meet these doubling offers. $70 would get us down to $1,730 for the hole that we're in. It's going to make for a heck of a community-made miracle for Friday on the front porch, you know, if we can do that. It got a little shouty today in Manhattan. I said shouty. Prosecutors had to yell to make their voices heard over the shenanigans of Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers. Over on the platform formerly known as Twitter. I know that's a big mouthful every time I say it, but, well, I get a big kick out of dead-naming Leon Scum's scummy little platform. At Inner City Press, Matthew Russell Lee posted an entire thread. Trump's lawyer, Bove, I didn't mean to mention a name, prosecutor, it's a first-degree relative of Mr. Howard, but it was on an AMI device. Judge Merchan, you're saying they're business records? Prosecutor, I'm saying they're authenticated. Prosecutor, Dylan Howard texted to his relative, candidate denies, but I'm going to interview relative. Why are you going if you're not going to publish it? Dylan Howard wrote, information is powerful and I'm collecting a lot. Only DP knows, that would be David Pecker. Burner phones. Prosecutor, so we think all of that shows Dylan Howard's state of mind. Then there are the election night texts. Dylan Howard texted his relative, at least if he wins, I'll be pardoned for electoral fraud. Justice Merchan, I will consider this again over lunch, but that they come off an AMI device is not enough for me. Are we going to be done with Mr. Pecker today? Direct and cross. Prosecutor, I have a good 2 or 3 hours left. Pettifogger Bove, we're not going to finish today. Merchan, let's get the witness and the jury. Mr. Pecker, you remain under oath. Prosecutor, after the election, you released Dino Sajudin? Yes, in December 2016. Prosecutor, in the Access Hollywood tape? Pecker. A conversation between Mr. Trump and Billy Bush. Mr. Trump said you can grab a woman by the genitals. It was damaging for the campaign. Prosecutor, what's this email? About a post on Radar. Take it down, said Pecker. Prosecutor, please read it. Pecker. Howard wrote it to Michael Cohen that the Playboy Man story was on Radar before we bought the site. It was also sent to Hope Hicks. Prosecutor, did you ever email with Donald Trump? Pecker, never. Prosecutor, when did you hear about Stormy Daniels? Pecker. I was having dinner with my wife, and I got a call from Dylan Howard. He said Keith Davidson and Ms. Rodriguez, an agent for those type of celebrities, that Stormy was those type of celebrities, that Stormy was selling a story about sex with Trump. Prosecutor, can you read from your text with Dylan Howard? He wrote to me, the price is $120,000. There's also interest from the Mail and GMA. Good morning, America. I responded, I don't want AMI linked to a porn star. It would be bad with Walmart, our biggest distributor. Says a little bit about Walmart, doesn't it? Of course, the entire fact that that Nitwit Nero relied on the National Enquirer to spread his filth says everything in the world about what he thinks about his constituents and his voters. That, in fact, They're the voters he loves. Remember, what was it, the Nevada primary in 2016?
Oh, I love uneducated voters.
Pecker. I told him we already paid the doorman $30,000 and $150,000 to Karen McDougal. I'm not a bank. So Dylan Howard contacted Michael Cohen. I spoke with Michael, too. He asked me to pay for the story. I said, no, I'm not going to be involved with a porn star. But a Playboy bunny's okay. Pecker, Dylan came to my office near the end of October. Michael Cohen was supposed to wire the money to Keith Davidson, but didn't. Dylan was worried he'd lose the sources. Michael Cohen says, David, you should pay. I said, no, you buy it or the boss will be angry. Prosecutor, is this a record of your interview with the FBI? Yes. 302B, page 5. Why did you make the calls on Signal? Pecker, Michael Cohen said to use it. Things are deleted after a time. And this went on at length. At one point, Justice Merchan said, I've signed the order to show cause. Now the texts. Prosecutor said, we're introducing them as business records. It was part of the regular business of AMI. These are discussions between co-conspirator Dylan Howard and Ms. Rodriguez. And so what Pettifogger Bove did was he outed by name an individual in open court, and the prosecutor yelled, whoa! At which point Bo said, oh, sorry, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean to mention a name. Wouldn't it be nice to have audio of this? Wouldn't it be nice if we, the people, could actually see the courtroom, see what's taking place? I know, we're just not grown up enough for that, are we? And of course, I referenced the judge saying he issued the rule to show cause. Christopher Conroy, one of the prosecution team, said Nitwit Nero had again violated the gag order because Orange Genius over and over again attacked the judge's daughter, also attacked Michael Cohen, and went on and also attacked Pecker, who was his friend, whom he invited to the inauguration in January 2017. Jesus. And, of course, he melted down today. Oh, he ain't gonna make it, y'all. When he left the courtroom, he was shambling particularly slowly as he came up to the press gaggle. Thank you for being here. The U.S. Supreme Court had a monumental hearing on immunity, and the immunity having to do with presidential immunity, and I think it was made clear, I hope it was made clear, that the president has to have immunity or you don't have a president. And then he hopped over and started talking about how the very fine Nazis in Charlottesville were nothing compared to what's going on college campuses today, and said the very fine Nazis in Charlottesville were his words,
little peanut.
And, various people on formerly Twitter picked up on just how kind of low energy wise. Ron Philipkowski said he sounds 150 years old. And even one of his maggots said, he looked a little tired. It was a long day for him. I don't think it was a good idea to kind of go out and do that. He's falling apart before our very eyes. And he cannot function without a 12-pack of Diet Coke and a couple of rails of Adderall. Here at the halfway point of the program, let's run over and check in on the stress line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, right to you.
Todd.
Oh, you didn't know it was me?
No.
Well, I just found out, too. That's okay.
Oh, okay. And so it begins.
Listen, I have to say this. Like you, it's so much. There's so much data spewing out of your mouth today. But let me. I'm glad that you put a fine point, as you like to say, a fine point on the FBI thing. Because really, and as you were saying it, you know, it made me feel like this is a good way to present it to people so they get it. And what I'm trying to say is that any historian, anyone who's been paying, you know, who keeps up with these types of things, sociology, history, these things, you know, the FBI is inherently, and the CIA, all the intelligence agencies, all the big, they're inherently conservative and right wing. I mean, you, and there's an easy way to explain that because lay people may not understand, but there's, you know, organizational dynamics, you know, it dictates. You hire the people that will carry on your vision. So Hoover, he hired jackasses that were like him. Now, I'm not disparaging the FBI, even though they've made a lot of mistakes along the way, but they're the best we have. And, you know, they make a lot of mistakes, but I want to, you know, bring this full circle because they definitely have room for criticism. And they're always late. Because they're white male, it's a white male conservative culture, and they have trouble trying to get into these other spheres because of their culture. But that's their problem. They haven't figured that out yet. They're stupid. But, you know, they do the best they can. But the reason that this is interesting now with Trump is that that's a perfect node for Russia to hit, to attack something that is inherently conservative, like that has been holding the country, but like it or not, you know, because remember, running this country is like a ship or boat. You just don't make it right. It's not a car. That's why they call it piloting. You have to navigate. You have to pilot.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It does.
Because you got momentum. But yeah, so that's the perfect way to attack us. Because Russia has beat us now on the cheap. On the cheap.
Well, that's the only way. That's the only way they can.
Yeah, they don't have any money. How long have we been talking about Boris Epstein and I just mentioned Meadows yesterday. So now he's indicted. I knew they were dirty. We knew they were dirty. It was just a matter of time. But that's not really what I call it. You know. This, I don't know if you caught some of the abortion, the healthcare arguments yesterday, but what is wrong with Sam Alito? Because he was a little bit too aggressive with lady that was.
Can I answer the question?
What the fuck is wrong with him? Go ahead, because I'm talking about.
Sometimes the simplest answer is most likely the correct one. He hates women.
He seems like it.
He is an Opus Dei Catholic who despises women in the name of Jesus. Okay, it really is that simple.
I'm telling you, if you could hear this I mean, I was like, I had the opportunity. I'm going to be real personal. I had the time, and I was soaking in the bathtub in Epsom salt. And
that's nice.
And it is. Everybody should slow down once in a while. You know, just because you can't move. Once you get in the bathtub, everything is slower. And I put on C-SPAN so I could hear it live. And I said, wow, this guy is really, he is really as nasty as people make him out to be. He was attacking, and then he didn't even have a good position because this is the part of the argument that got me. Alito doesn't seem to understand, and this, see, once again, I'm in the tub, and let me say, Epsom salts work.
Oh, yes, they do.
I don't know about bath salts and all that shit.
Oh, no.
But that shit,
no.
What are you doing?
Bath salts are for soaking, not smoking. Oh, wait a minute. Fuck it. I'm giving me a ding dong.
Well, I'm a ding dong. Ding dong.
And I like the Dr. Teal's ones.
Mm.
With the lavender.
Yes. They sell that in the big latte.
I get in an absolutely hot tub full of that, and it's better than Valium.
I used to think it was corny. That was like what the old people did, but there is something therapeutic to it. And you don't need a lot, and it does. It changes the whole composition, the chemical composition of the water. And believe me, that works. And I mean, you can't help but relax. And it works. It's good for your feet. Because remember, we have to take care of our feet, and I'm getting off topic. If you have some jacked up feet, do not wear sandals. We don't want to see these toes going in 10 different directions. And discolored toenails. Don't do that. Save yourself some trouble. Take care of your feet now. Get some chest rub. Slather it on your feet before you go to sleep. Put a sock on. Because nobody wants to see that. You don't want to see it. And, you know, toenail fungus is nothing to joke about. But that definitely works. You know, this comes from the People's Pharmacy. And so does tea tree oil. That's true also. But, because, you know, some of the other stuff that you have to ingest, that might not be good for your liver and kidneys. But that's an aside. But Alito, what he didn't seem to understand is that, and made me think about this as I was in Epsom salts, and my cells are still wet. I'm right back on topic. Amazing.
You are.
Is that, you know, a pregnant woman is a host.
Yes.
The baby is a guest. What happens when it's time for your guest to leave? What happens when they overstay their welcome?
Right. What happens
you
when
can
it,
have another
what,
guest?
What happens when it turns out they don't like the accommodations?
And they tear up the room.
Wreck the place.
You wrecked the place.
It's like
you got to go.
It's like having early Led Zeppelin staying with you.
That's it. That's exactly what I was thinking about the 70s, like Led Zeppelin or Van Halen in your hotel. You got to go. You've been here 3 nights. You have to go. Why? Don't. What? Why are you asking why? Please leave. Pay the bill and leave. You know. Maybe come back next year. We'll have room next year. That's
well,
why women have like a billion eggs.
It's interesting that you bring up the abortion care issue, because one of our least favorite women, I'm talking about Christy the Gnome, a maggot, the maggot governor of South Dakota stan, talking to Dana Bash on Sunday on CNN. Well, let me just get to the audio because I'd rather have her say it than have to make the words come out of my own mouth. It's gross.
After what happened in Arizona when a civil rights era law came back and is now the law of the land there, the
wait, hold on. Come on. This is a multimillionaire member of the professional broadcast world. Note how she described the 1864 abortion ban from before Arizona was even a state. Oh, my God.
After what happened in Arizona when a civil rights era law came back and is now the law of the land there, the former president, Donald Trump, said that that state law goes too far. The state, the law in your state is similar. It's an abortion ban, including areas where a woman is raped or in times of incest. So do you believe that this, the law in your state goes too far, just as he said about Arizona? Are you with him on that, or do you think that he's wrong?
You know, it's interesting because the law in my state was passed decades before I ever became governor. It was a trigger law that said when Roe v. Wade became overturned, that this would be the law that would go into place. So that may be a topic that will continue to be discussed in South Dakota. Our law today allows an exception to save the life of the mother, but the people in South Dakota will decide what their laws look like.
What do you think it should look like?
I can have an opinion, and I can weigh forward, and I can look at the science and what we've learned about babies in the womb, and if believe that we should protect life, but I think that our law today is what South Dakota wants, and they'll continue to have that debate, and I'll continue to follow through on my role, which is to make sure the will of the people is enforced.
Do you think there should be exceptions for rape and incest, for example?
And I think that every state's going to look different. That's
what's
different, Dana, is that I've constantly looked, and we rely in South Dakota on the fact that I'm pro-life, and we have a law that says that there is an exception for the life of the mother. And I just don't believe a tragedy should perpetuate another tragedy. I believe in taking care of mothers that are in a crisis situation, and that we should be walking alongside them, giving them all the information and the best information they can make before they have to be put in a situation where an abortion is the only option that they have. So I'll continue to do that and love mothers and families through these situations, recognizing that they are often challenging and scary, and many times they're feeling very alone. And in South Dakota, I hope that that's never our story.
You got that? First of all, civil rights era law banning abortion.
I got
that would be civil war, Dana. Do you not pre-read your teleprompter?
I'm glad because I'm glad you prefaced it, because I was like, well, it seems like he couldn't be talking about Dana, but then she got, it took her about 3 seconds to get me. I'm like, what is she talking about? It was a bunch of gobbledygook.
Well, what it boils down to, Todd, is Christy the Gnome thinks that it's a tragedy, her word, if a woman isn't forced to give birth to the product of her rape.
Isn't that right? Right. Now remember, what she said, and I've been around these people, she sounds just like one of these folks when these young ladies are in trouble, when I say in trouble because they're pregnant and they don't know what to do, not like 1950s, you're in trouble. But, and they go to these places and they think they're going to get counseling, but it's these right-wing Christian people, and what they try to do is make them carry the baby to term and do whatever. They have all kinds of, even though they don't want to. I had a friend, I took her to the place, and she came out, and she looked terrified. She said, there are crazy people in there. That's how she ended it. That's how they talk. You see, she didn't have any substance. When Dana asked her hard questions, she was mealy-mouthed. She had no answers. This is what I'm talking about. When we go back to Alito, back to this argument, because I was very, like I said, I had the time to just listen. There's nothing else I could do but listen. And why are people who have little or no background in human biology or don't even seem interested making biological decisions? Number one, that doesn't make any sense. You know, the law is supposed to follow the professionals. Like what a lot of people don't understand, like my background's in psychology, a lot of people don't understand that, you know, when you're in the social scientists deem what is appropriate in society and what isn't. And what that ends up doing is distilling down into what is legal and what is not. You see, it's subtle, but it trickles down because it has to come from somewhere.
Sure.
Because when you let lawyers just make shit up who have no background in it, it gets botched. And I remember us talking probably 5 years ago when this Monsanto seed thing came up, where, you know, they have these patented seeds now. If you're a farmer and some seeds blow in your land, you can get sued. They don't care about the birds, the wind. And I said to you, I said, well, they didn't consult a plant biologist to explain that, you know, this is natural course. And you're like, nope. I'm like, well, that's stupid. You know, that was Scalia. But that's just a case in point. So what Alito was saying, back to the abortion, what he was saying to the lady bringing the case, I forget her name, and she has, like, bangs. I can see her face now. He was disputing what is a person. In other words, the plaintiff, the state, I guess it's the state, you know, the people for the state, the lady was saying that this has already been covered. You know, the mother is in charge. The mother is the most important person in this. In other words, Alito was trying to make it like the infant, the unborn baby, had more rights than the mother. And this is why I said the mother's a host. And maybe they have to present that argument in that fashion so it sinks through, but I don't even know if that matters. Because it is, it's the truth. It is. I mean, so they are actually letting these women, once again, back to biology, and birth control. Like, have they never been with a woman who's a heavy bleeder? Some people have to take birth control because they bleed a lot.
Yeah, I know some a little bit about that. I know a little bit about that. I have daughters.
You see? This is not simple stuff. And they're trying to make, sometimes things are not simple. This is why we have professionals. And this is why we keep separate, these things, like legislation, professionals. This is why we have panels and directors and boards. You know, this bullshit with this court. These people, so this is what I want to know. Now, is this a plan? Is there something bigger going on? Are they purposely just moving in a fascist direction on purpose, or are they just scared of an insurrection, or both?
Porque no los dos?
Pardon me?
Porque no los dos? Why not both?
Oh, why not both? Right. Well, cover both bases. But see, that leaves, that, I don't know. That's a bad place to be.
Well, yeah, it is.
But the court has shown us that they're corrupt now. I mean, I wish the comic people would show every day that Clarence Thomas actually produced a video to try to convince people he was salt of the earth, like in his RV. You know, when he's not in private islands that no one else can afford to go to. You know, this is absolutely insane. But what happened yesterday with these fake electors, I highly suspected this was going to happen, but maybe it won't matter now. But this is what I was saying about the depositions. When you hear these people's depositions, like Sidney Powell and these other folks, This is a concerted, they had, I don't know if you saw Jehoshaphat today.
I did not.
Oh, you didn't?
No,
oh,
no, bad. No, but, well, I mean, I do have, I've got a clip handy, but it has to do with.
They quote.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say they quoted one of my old friends, and we differ politically totally, but they quoted John McWhorter, who I know very well. I mean, we grew up together. But I was kind of, I don't know, Joe didn't make a good argument. I don't understand these protests. I think it's more complicated than they're making it out.
Hold on. Joe has been, after he, I'm speculating here, but after he blistered the hide off of that Israeli government jackass a couple of weeks ago and made it readily apparent what a liar out of whole cloth he is. I suspect Joe got pulled in on the carpet and got the Riot Act read
I keep track of these mouthpieces. You got Lerner. Do you remember this person's name? This cabinet official. Because they lie, boy. They lie good. And they talk. Have you noticed they're like bad lawyers when the facts are not on their side? So they talk over the interviewer and reporters and they bang on the table. I'm not making this up. You know, but I guess I hear what you're saying. Well, and I fear that's what I'm saying. We're going back into this space where you can't make any constructive criticism. Now, once again, I've not seen any pro-Hamas. I want to see that because I want to see what these people look like. How in the world could you be pro-Hamas? I don't understand. I mean, we got pro-Nazis, but we've always had Nazis, and apparently that's okay. You know, no big deal. Like, well, they're in the police force, and the firemen, everything else, but that's okay. But I don't see it. All I see is a bunch of people that, you know, aren't being lied to anymore. Because, you know, you have to understand, the university students, we talked about this before, if you're not going to, that's the one time you can protest in your life. If you have a job, you're most likely working part-time. And you're keeping abreast of the issues if you're there, because otherwise you wouldn't be there unless you just don't know what else to do with your time. And it gives young people a chance to latch on to something they believe in, be it right or wrong. Now, breaking into buildings and stuff, like I heard the some students broke into a Vanderbilt building. Of course that's not right. But without protest, our country would not be where it is. Now, when people are offended in offensive language and calling people names and violence, no. There's a way to protest. You have to follow the rules. And, you know, we don't want to get into the space where we used to be because we're not dealing with honest brokers. We're simply not. It's not that kind of game anymore. And these students are everyone's seeing the truth. I mean, like the rest of the industrialized world is like, no, stop. What the hell are you doing? Yes, we want to get rid of Hamas, but does that mean you have to kill everything in sight? What are these people going to go back to?
Well, you know hold on, Ty. You know how it is with bed bugs. Hamas are like bed bugs with rockets and AK-47s. And so in order to get rid of, you know, if you've got bed bugs, they'll eat you up. And the only way to get rid of them is to burn down the house.
Gas the whole place.
Don't you know anything? Of course.
Right. Of course
Israel has to slaughter every Palestinian in Gaza. And the Christians in Gaza, too. Because otherwise, how can they make sure that they've gotten rid of Hamas? I mean, it's perfectly
right, and they will
perfectly
work.
Rational.
No, you're right, and I'm glad, and we're tongue in cheek, but this is true. It is how preposterous it is because they say, "Well, we've been the best fighter, the best agitators or fighters ever. We let people know we're coming in, and we tell them to get out. Yet they have no gasoline, they have no way to get out. They're crippled." The beat up, maybe you can tell them to go from here to there for like, what, eight since October? How many times can you move when you got, like, what are you supposed to do? Take your mother is in a fucking traction in a bed. You're supposed to push her 50 miles to the next little town? You know, this is kind of crazy. I mean, what are they trying to prove now? Are those little kids, the 13 kids and those women, are they Hamas? And I'm glad you said that segue was good because.
Well, I mean, was that mama who was 7 months pregnant and got rocketed to death by Israel? Was she Hamas?
She was thinking about it.
I mean, they at least evacuated the premature little girl who weighed like 4 pounds. At least they evacuated her to a MASH unit outside Rafah. Maybe the Israelis won't firebomb it. But then again, Bibi Netanyahu and what's-his-fuck Ben Gavir and Beelzebub Smotrich might decide that that seven-month-old preemie needs to die because Hamas must be eliminated.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Just like they used to say about us. Kill them before they hatch. But see, that's the whole point. And folks who don't know the intricacies of this whole relationship that we're talking about in Israel, between the Palestinians who live in outer Israel, like not in Jerusalem, because it is complicated. You have Arabs and Jews and Christians. Everybody lives in Israel proper, but they have certain kind of papers, like in South Africa. But if you live out of there, you know, like the West Bank or somewhere else, well, it's quite different. And they don't really want you around. They view the Palestinians as less, as subhuman. Like I was saying, my roommate, he couldn't say Palestinian or Arab without saying, kill the animal, pit. And spit on, I was like, you cannot spit in our dorm room floor anymore. I said, hit the mob. I said, you gonna stop that shit. And, you finally got the message. But I mean, I'm not there to change him. That was, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'm just telling you what I know. That's my experience. That's all I'm saying. Now, it's just a big mess, but I don't understand. There's too much killing now. It's time to stop. Release the hostages. But you see, I'm surprised. Well, I don't know. The whole thing's a big mess, but there's not, what? And see, that's what you said. I remember when we were talking. It took me a long time. Because no one likes to hear this, it's unsavory, but there is definitely a racist element with this faction of Zionists. And they don't like to admit it because it's air and dirty laundry, but they don't like it, but it's true. They don't even like them. They're weirdos. They're right-wing weirdos. And, I mean, they're crazy. They shoot at reporters. You know, so all of they're all acting like terrorists. Not everybody, but you have all these innocent people. There's not that many left now. I just don't understand it. I don't understand it. I mean, how can I have sympathy? How can you have sympathy for that?
I don't.
And once again, you not see it.
I don't know.
You don't what?
No, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, if they're operating under the ancient nomadic desert dweller rules of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, I'd say that the ancient laws of Khan Lee have been observed, and vendetta is satisfied by 34,000 innocent deaths. Otherwise, you have to ask, when is enough enough, and enough is enough when there aren't any more Palestinians and there are high-rise gambling casinos along the Mediterranean Levant where Gaza used to be.
Looks like it.
And, you know, some more open land to bring in some more wild-eyed fascist settlers. See also, compare favorably, colonists.
Mm-hmm. Well, you kind of read my mind with that, because it got me thinking, and I know you're not supposed to say it, but it's just so weird. But they act real Old Testament-y. You know, it really is. It was real like Old Testament shit. They just don't give a fuck. I firmly believe, here we go, believe, but I see the evidence. They're going to try to move into southern Lebanon. Because they're going to say, well, we have to have a buffer zone, blah, 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 blah. You know, they're not going to be happy. And there's, just two more things a lot of people don't understand. Number one,
this paternalistic relationship between the nation state of Israel and the Palestinian occupants, people who live there, they have money coming. The Palestinians have money coming to them, but it comes to Israel and they don't release it. They don't release the money. If they have to guard over it, because they don't want Hamas to get, you know, a handle on it. And that's okay. So, you know, I don't know what they expect. You can't keep kicking people and not expect for them to fight back. So I guess that's why they have to kill everybody. But that's the thing. You can't kill everybody. And what I'm concerned about, I mean, they've been fighting over there. It's just disgusting. I didn't think we were going to get like this. It's, you know, Netanyahu is a rat. He's a disgusting piece of shit. And Smotrich, and they won't admit that they're racist. That's the other problem. And I wish Donnie Deutsch would at least admit that. You know, and he needs to stay out of history. That is not his forte. His forte is branding and marketing, and he needs to stay in his damn lane because he don't know shit about history. When he opens his mouth about that, he just looks ignorant to me. However, you know, that's an aside. But this thing, this whole situation has already affected us. We've already lost U.S. troops over this. And I fear that now we're going to have to be on the lookout for, you know, these Middle Eastern based, you know, terrorists again. Because they're pissed off. They're pissed off. People are pissed off. And if the students, if people, I mean, everyone around the world can see this, what do you think they think? And we're just getting started. Wait till these kids grow up and like, why, where's my mommy, my daddy, where? And see, if you're just watching American news, you're not getting the full picture. You gotta watch BBC. You gotta watch Al Jazeera. Watch, France 4. You know, Explore. Because they just don't broadcast. I mean, you'll get the granular. You'll see it. That is disgusting. I don't even know how these people are still alive. I don't know how those hostages are still alive, frankly. But, you know, and now we got our own problems. We're going fast as we can make it. I mean, what are they, that's what I'm saying. What are they, I'm shifting gears totally. I just dropped the transmission. I'm shifting so hard. But why are the powers that be hell-bent on protecting a mentally ill fascist and his ways?
Because he normalizes their hate, Todd. That's the whole thing. How many times must we be told the cruelty is the point? By the way, y'all, just a reminder, there's $35 in challenges on the table, and it sure would be great if those challenges could be met. It would be so helpful. And it would get us down to a hole that's only $1,730 deep. So there's that. PayPal button, headon.live, et cetera, et cetera.
Did it go down to any at all tonight?
No, we're a goose egg tonight.
Okay, well, I should get off.
No, you shouldn't. 2 hours and 4 minutes in. Bed bugs with bombs, says Lee. The military-industrial complex has gone too far. Lee added, Robin, please remind the Horn Family Community Congregation to donate so that Robin can afford closed captions. Signed, Lee, in Nueva York. I know. My Spanish is terrible. Por que no los dos? It's kind of hillbilly. Por que no los dos, y'all? Well, you mentioned our filthy morning habit earlier. And, they did. I really wanted to see if anybody is ever going to catch up with us about co-conspirator number 6. I was thinking about you last night when I was talking about that toward the end of the program, because you mentioned Boris Epstein earlier, and his crooked ass got indicted in Arizona, Stan, as one of the co-conspirators in the fake elector scheme there. And the first one to guess what was going on was Matt in San Francisco, who simply sent me a note saying, "Jenny, Jenny, who can I turn to? 867-5309. And the more I think about it, so you know who didn't get indicted in Arizona Stan yesterday?
Cheeseborough.
Kenneth Cheeseborough. He didn't get indicted because him has made a deal.
And, you know, when you, yes.
And the dimes yep. are dropping all over.
That's the thing. This thing is going to get, this is always getting sticky.
But wait. Let me just flesh this out a little bit more. It's a bit of a Ginsu commercial.
You're going to flesh it out, though?
If they were, again with the flesh. If they were, say they weren't divulging that Boris Epstein is unknown co-conspirator number six in D.C., because maybe he'd made a deal with Jack Smith, do you think he would have been indicted in Arizona? Because I don't.
I have had my eye on him. I think he is a keystone to this whole thing, because I really think he's the on-the-ground Russian handler here, because there are very few people who spell their name. That is a straight Russian Jewish spelling. Like, people go out of their way not to spell their name like that. You understand? I grew up in the Northeast.
Yeah, the S-H is a little bit of an outlier. Yeah.
Are you kidding me? No, people were going out of their way. Like, why do you think they have so many people named Green? They dropped the bird or Stein.
I hear Epstein, and I think of Humphrey Bogart trying to say Epstein. Epstein. Right?
Epstein. Well, right. Sure. I mean, that's yeah. old. Like,
it's,
that it, is.
But it's, that, it's almost like a, it's almost like a verbal tick. Or something, kind of like the, I forget what the term is. Think of Captain Queeg saying strawberries.
Strawberries. Right. Yep. Epstein. Yep. Oh.
Epstein took the strawberries from the officer's mess.
I'm sorry. We had them dentalized. Churchill,
so, but so they didn't. They haven't. I don't know. I know this is all entirely speculative. But I can't help but think that somebody out there has to have contemplated this as well. And they're just being told, don't say it out loud. But it didn't get said today. But they did say a lot. And frankly, I like clips like this because they were actually gooning on the Arizona co-conspirators.
Wait, don't say that loud. What you're about to play?
Yeah. People don't say that Jin is number six.
But she is deep in it. Her tweets are right there. Her text messages.
Ask yourself the question. Let's all ask ourselves the question. What would today's hearing in the Supreme Court have been like if Fappy Thomas's chair had been empty because his wife is an unindicted co-conspirator in the case?
Mm.
Conversely, what would today's hearing have been like if his wife was an unindicted co-conspirator in the case and he was there to tank the proceedings? Could it be that Jack Smith is actually trying to protect the idea that the president is not immune, knowing that Fappy would cobble together a majority just to protect his own fucking wife? And that the maggots on the court would go with him under those circumstances? Maybe that's why nobody has mentioned it being Jin except us. you know, hey, Roxanne.
It's too explosive.
Hey, Roxanne, ixnay on the NEJ amiste.
It's there in our face. I mean, it's like you're living with an insurrection. Like, she may as well have been in Nancy Pelosi's office.
Who knows? But anyway, anyway, they were having fun this morning, and I like to see them enjoying their job. Because we enjoy our conversations, all the conversations on the horn. We carry on, and we make, well, slightly on the edge of propriety jokes, like last night when, you know, Matt said something about edging, and I said, "What's that?" So at least they get to have a little fun now and then. So here we go.
To Trump going after his former fixer, Michael Cohen, just as the judge overseeing the ex-president's hush money trial weighs whether Trump violated his gag order. Welcome back to Morning Joe. It is Thursday, April 25th. So much going on today. Caddy Kay is still with us and joining the conversation. We have MSNBC contributor Mike Barnicle, the president of the National Action Network and host of MSNBC's Politics Nation. Reverend Al Sharpton is with us. Let's start in Arizona, where an Arizona grand jury has indicted 11 so-called fake electors, along with several other allies of Donald Trump, for their efforts to overturn the 2020 election. The 58-page indictment includes conspiracy, fraud, and forgery charges related to attempts by...
Was it me, or did she kind of hesitate over indictment? And some neuron in Mika's brain said, don't go where Marjorie Taylor Greene went. Don't say indictment. Don't say indictment. Don't say indictment. Was that, did you hear that? Let's play that again.
2020 election. The 58-page indictment includes
indictment.
Conspiracy, fraud, and forgery charges related to attempts by the defendants to change.
I mean, did you hear it, Todd? Did you hear it? Indictment.
I did.
I don't think that's because it carried over on the next screen on the teleprompter.
No, she had Pecker on her mind because they were joking about David Pecker. They couldn't stop saying Pecker.
Pecker, Pecker, Pecker.
Pecker, Pecker. I mean, literally, it was a joke this morning, like Pecker, and they were laughing. I mean, everybody was laughing.
It's been all week long. She tried to sort of gracefully back away from it, I think, yesterday when she said, I mean, you know, like Woodpecker. Woodpecker. No, no, Mika. No. We know, you know, and you know, we know, you know, and you know, we know, you know. And we know, you know, we know, you know. We're a very knowledgeable audience.
And dick jokes are extra funny when you're dealing with mushroom caps because it's just, you know, that's the cherry on top. Because you have to.
Sometimes I just have to you put the alley-oop up, and sometimes I just have to stand there and let it bounce harmlessly off the rim because you left me wide open on that one, but we're not going there because this is a respectable broadcast. Let's go back to Mika.
Change the election results in Trump's favor. This was the scene back on December 14, 2020. It's all right there on tape.
Yeah, I mean, they taped it.
They taped it just to make sure, you know, you could see it. When 11 people met at the Republican Party headquarters in Phoenix to sign a certificate claiming to be Arizona's 11 electors, despite Joe Biden winning Arizona by nearly 11,000 votes.
So, Willie, do you have any theory
I'm
why
curious.
These people taped
I still
their
can't
crime?
Believe what I'm mean, watching.
Listen,
well,
we,
I have a theory.
We
don't want to hear mine, do you?
Well, it depends.
Yeah, you're kind of scared always.
Well, we kind of are.
Yeah.
But, Willie, do you want to hear Mika's theory?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, yes.
Okay, go ahead. Let's
it's
hear.
A cult. They'll do anything for him. They will commit a crime on camera for Donald Trump. Here you go. Exhibit A.
All right, so that's her theory, Willie. So whatever it is, it's not, I got to say, their lawyers have to look at him and go, what were you thinking?
What in God's name?
You have to wonder what lawyer's taking the case. So let me review the, oh, you recorded yourself committing the crime?
Yeah.
Then you signed a document committing a crime and posted it to social media?
Hit the cowbell, Joe. Hit the cowbell.
The lawyer says to them, listen, these are wild charges. I'm sure none of this ever happened.
Yeah.
We're going to get some corroborating witnesses.
We'll help you out.
We'll get reasonable doubt.
Okay.
Nobody will even know this happened.
This is what we do.
Because it never happened.
Yeah.
There's a video? you have a video of the conspiracy? I mean, come on. What's wrong with these
people?
You signed it.
You made it official.
I don't know, Willie. Not the sharpest tools in the shed here.
Either that or it's a cult.
They just wanted the shortstop things, Joe. They wanted to eliminate the middleman in their court case, you know? Forget that. Forget the pretrial hearings. Let's just go straight to the videotape. Just like Warner Wolf would say, straight to the videotape. Here we all are.
Let's go to the videotape.
Which goes back and raises a question.
I love that. You want to shortstop the thing. So it's not a 6-4-3 double play. It's a 4-3 double play. Shortstop, not necessary. They were having fun, weren't they?
Well, because it's like, oh my God, these people. It's just getting started. Like, okay.
It's just getting started, and it's already stupid.
But wait a minute. See, now we can pull in, remember the Green Bay Suite? Remember that jackass?
John Eastman. Yeah, John Eastman. He's one of the indicted.
John Eastman and the other guy's already in prison. God, what's his name? Navarro. Now, remember, that's Arizona. Michigan has done the same thing.
Yeah, and the conspiracy.
I got that too.
And guess who was doing the dialing for Wisconsin?
Who? Whom?
Wasn't that Jinjin?
Oh, God.
Wasn't it?
See, this is... You know what? All these people are criminal. You know what? This is what it looks like. This is as Machiavellian as you can get. These people did. They fuck the rules. We're going to get what we want. And if not, we have guns and we have liquor and we had the police on our side because a lot of our folks are in law enforcement and we don't care. And this is what we're going to do. This is our guy. This is what we believe in. And this is what we're going to do. Now, and that's, you know, people believe in things and it's wrong, but that's the way they're operating. And if you don't believe that, just look at the action.
Oh, and by the way, Ralph's serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Jinjin Thomas Wisconsin Connection Research Department said, yes, it was Wisconsin, Robin.
Mm.
Well, thank you, Ralphs. Thank you, but we've still got more clip here because they're still having fun. And
go ahead.
I think we should enjoy their levity.
Why did it take 3.5 years to bring this case?
Well.
But I don't know. The document also described 7 others in Trump's orbit who were indicted, but their names have been redacted, such as former White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows.
God.
Lawyers Rudy Giuliani, still coming at him. Jenna Ellis, who's already said, I'm a Christian, I'm sorry. We'll see if she does that in Arizona as well. John Eastman, Christina Bob, who now runs election. I'm not making this
up. No, you can't.
Election integrity at the RNC. Trump campaign official Boris Epstein and former campaign and White House official Mike Roman. Donald Trump wasn't charged.
Just headache-inducing.
Described as an unindicted co-conspirator one. Arizona becomes the fourth state to file criminal charges against so-called fake electors that sought to undermine Joe Biden's victory over Donald Trump. Let's bring in our U.S. attorney, former U.S. attorney, and MSNBC contributor Barbara McQuaid. Barbara, we can ask you so many questions. We could throw out the fact, why did they tape this? I could ask why it took so long to bring this case, since they had the fraudulent documents for years and videotaped for years. But I will start by asking how strong of a case you think this is against the fraudulent electors.
Well, as detailed in this indictment, this is what, you know, prosecutors would refer to as a speaking indictment. They don't just throw out the charges. They detail the evidence that they have against them. And so it appears to me a very strong case. And also, because you've got so many defendants here, it seems very likely that some of them will cooperate and testify, especially because, as you point out, there is video evidence of the crime being occurring. I think one of the things that is really interesting here is the inclusion in this case of people like John Eastman and Rudy Giuliani, Christina Bob, Jenna Ellis. Some of these people have already been charged in other jurisdictions, and that creates leverage for both jurisdictions, because at some point these cases are stacking up so much, they have an incentive to work out some sort of global plea deal where they say, all right, I can't defend myself in all these forums. I can't face all of this prison time. Where do I sign up? I'm ready to cooperate in all of these cases.
Oh, my God.
And Barbara, we can point out, in terms of the timing of this, the current Attorney General, Chris Mays, got the job just over a year and a half ago. There was a Republican Attorney General before that. Maybe that plays into it as well. But just to remind our viewers, and we're talking in our last hour with Lisa Rubin about this, what exactly we're watching in that video, who those people are. They call themselves the alternate electors. They're the fake electors. So what are we seeing in this video right here, Barbara?
Well, this is where the group is gathering to sign these documents. And, you know, one of the key charges here is forgery, that they signed documents claiming to be the duly appointed electors of the state of Arizona following the election of Donald Trump, when they knew that, that there's no such thing whatsoever. I think the key evidence here, you know, the prosecutors have to prove not only what someone did, but what they were thinking at the time. And so, what were you thinking will likely be a question a lawyer asks them. But they'll have to prove that they had fraudulent intent, that someone didn't tell them, this is just a provisional thing that you're going to sign in case for some reason the election turns out to be different from what we thought it would be. So please sign here in good faith. So it would be the burden of the prosecutor to prove that's not what was happening at all, that they knew very well that this was all part of this other scheme. And that's, you know, that's the charge. And I think there's lots of evidence described here, especially with Giuliani's efforts and some of the things that they were trying to do to create this impression that there was some sort of rigging of this election or fraud in this election, when, of course, we know that that was absolutely not true, and there was no evidence of it.
Barbara McQuaid did a good job laying that out, didn't she?
Yes, she did, and she's a professor, I think.
Yeah, she's a former federal prosecutor and a professor of law at the University of Michigan Law School.
Yeah, she's I think all this drama, all this legal stuff is making everyone, well, anyone who's interested in the legal, on the legal side, making them sharper. Because, you know, people are forced to look at legal avenues that, you know, we weren't forced to look at before because, you know, we didn't have to. But our system has been under strain now. I guess that's it for our country. I mean, because... I don't know what the plan is. This just don't look right. I mean, this is crazy. How in the world could they? Well, the only thing I can say, maybe that's the middle ground. Maybe they'll make a ruling at some point in the interim, blanket immunity versus, because there's a big difference between, like, immunity for things that have to do with war. And, you know, meddling with an election or even investigating an election, that doesn't fall under immunity. How could that? You know, you're speculating. That's not defense.
No.
Does that make any sense?
Yes.
Okay.
It absolutely
does. I mean, I'm waiting for these... Well, why don't they flesh this shit out? Why are they waiting so long?
Well, I think, I mean, didn't there are circles within circles within circles. Ripples out from a pebble thrown into a pond. There are things going on here, and I hate falling back on this explanation. Truly and really, I do. But we don't know what's going on in the background. Maybe nothing. But like this business with Jenny Thomas.
Hmm.
If she is co-conspirator number six, one, if that turns out to be true, I want a spot on Morning Joe, okay? Just period. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
Do it. Yeah, put me up at the plaza or somewhere. I don't care. Give me the old Gene Dixon slot at the National Enquirer. I'll make predictions every year, and I don't even have to be right. People will like apple pie. Who cares? But I feel like there are things going on in the background here that we, by definition, we can't know. The classified documents case, for instance, we don't know what those classified documents necessarily were. We have allusions to them, but we don't have definitive statements. And probably never will, because they were that sensitive relative to national security. But we know what they are. They are national security secrets. And those are probably copies, and whoever needed them has probably purchased them by now.
Good God.
You know, I had a message from Tamara in San Diego a little bit ago talking about my analysis of what happened in the Supreme Court today, and Tamara very kindly said, cogent and terrifying. Thank you, Tamara. I don't think there was any other way to see what happened today. You know, bless her heart, and I mean that kindly.
Sotomayor.
Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Oh, maybe it was her. Are you sure? Is this going to be the end?
She pulled up just short of telling Hacksaw Jack that he was just a silly person.
I missed that part.
Unserious. Well, lucky for you, I have the little clippy clip.
They haven't done a comprehensive review. I think this looks like all they did was text search for president in 18 U.S. code. Again, under Franklin, that's a very telling indication that the word president is not in the statute. Isn't necessarily a magic word requirement, so to speak. But more fundamentally than that, they can see there are statutes that exist. In addition to that, much impeachment could occur as a result of private conduct. So the impeachment judgment clause does do significant work by authorizing the subsequent prosecution of a president there, because what the framers, if you look at what they're discussing in the thing, is in the Constitutional Convention, is principally concerns about private conduct, which, of course, we concede are not immune.
Okay, so just pick up Justice Kagan's example of a president who orders a coup. Let's imagine that he is impeached and convicted for ordering that coup, and let's just accept for the sake of argument your position that that was official conduct. You're saying that he couldn't be prosecuted for that even after conviction and an impeachment proceeding, if there was not a statute that expressly referenced the president and made it criminal for the president.
There would have to be a statute that made a clear statement that Congress purported to regulate the president's conduct.
Okay, thank you.
Justice Jackson?
And before Justice Jackson ties into him, you see what I mean about him sounding like, he sounds like a dull hacksaw going through sheet metal.
I think your name, yes, your moniker is perfect. And I'm wondering, is he related to RFK Jr.?
I'm more inclined to think he's related to Alex Jones.
Oh, well, that could be his half.
I mean, if I hadn't known that was Hacksaw Jack Sauer, I would have thought, for a minute there, I sort of came unstuck in time, and I was waiting for him to start talking about the monkey jellyfish hybrids in the wet markets of old Kowloon and how the frogs are getting transed.
But his argument, he was like, is that what you really mean? He said, yes. So you're saying that it's total immunity no matter what? Yes. Okay.
And
like at this point, he's
and Ralph's pointing
am
out
I exaggerating?
And Ralph's points out that he's talking so fast. When a lawyer talks fast like that, he's got something to hide. Not saying, just saying. And what he has to hide is his absolute knowledge that his client is as guilty as a sack of homemade sin. But, like I said, Ketanji Brown Jackson got hold of him, and it wasn't nice. Here we go.
So I think I now understand better your position in your discussions with Justice Kavanaugh. It became clear that you are saying that for the private acts of a president, there's no immunity, but for the official acts of the president, there is immunity. Is that your position?
I agree with that.
All right. So one thing that occurs to me is that this sort of difficult line drawing problem that we're having with all of these hypotheticals, is this a private act or a public act, is being necessitated by that assumption. Because of course, if official acts didn't get absolute immunity, then it wouldn't matter. We wouldn't have to identify which are private and which are public, correct?
That, in fact, is the approach of the D.C. Circuit. There's no determination that needs to be made.
Right, but I'm just making, so to the extent we're worried about, like, how do we figure out whether it's private or public, we have to understand that we're only doing that because of an underlying assumption that the public acts get immunity. So let me explore that assumption. Why is it, as a matter of theory, and I'm hoping you can sort of zoom way out here, that the president would not be required to follow the law when he is performing his official acts. Everyone else, there are lots of folks who have very high-powered jobs, who make a lot of consequential decisions, and they do so against the backdrop of potential criminal prosecution if they should break the law in that capacity. And we understand and we know as a matter of fact that the President of the United States has the best lawyers in the world. When he's making a decision, he can consult with pretty much anybody as to whether or not this thing is criminal or not. So why would we have a situation in which we would say that the president should be making official acts without any responsibility for following the law?
I respectfully disagree with that characterization. The president absolutely does have responsibility. He absolutely is required to follow the law in all of his official acts. But the remedy for that is the question. Could he be subject to personal vulnerability, sent to prison for making a bad decision after he leaves office?
But other people who have consequential jobs and who are required to follow the law make those determinations against the backdrop of that same kind of risk. So what is it about the president? I mean, I've heard you say it's because the president has to be able to act boldly, make kind of consequential decisions. I mean, sure, but again, there are lots of people who have to make life and death kinds of decisions, and yet they still have to follow the law. And if they don't, they could be sent to prison, et cetera, et cetera. So
I say two things in response to that,
yes.
Both from Fitzgerald. That's the very sort of inference or reasoning that this court rejected in Fitzgerald.
No, but let me just – Fitzgerald was a civil situation in which the president actually was in a different position than other people because of the nature of his job, the high-profile nature, and the fact that he touches so many different things. When you're talking about private civil liability, you know, anybody on the street can sue him. We could see that the president was sort of different than the ordinary person when you say, should he be immune from civil liability from anybody who wants to sue him? But when we're talking about criminal liability, I don't understand how the president stands in any different position with respect to the need to follow the law as he is doing his job than anyone else.
He is required to follow the law. And what Fitzgerald
but he's not
said,
if there's no criminal prosecution. If there's no threat of criminal prosecution, what prevents the president from just doing whatever he wants?
All the structural checks that are identified in Fitzgerald and a whole series of this court's cases that go back to Martin. Barton against Mott, for example, impeachment, oversight by Congress, public oversight. There's a long series of them. Fitzgerald directly addresses this in the civil context, and we think
I'm not sure that's much of a backstop. And what I'm, I guess, more worried about, seem to be worried about the president being chilled. I think that we would have a really significant opposite problem if the president wasn't chilled. If someone with those kinds of powers, the most powerful person in the world, with the greatest amount of authority, could go into office knowing that there would be no potential penalty for committing crimes, I'm trying to understand what the disincentive is from turning the Oval Office into, the seat of criminal activity in this country.
I don't think there's any allegation of that in this case. And what George Washington said is, what Benjamin Franklin said is, we view the prosecution of a chief executive as something that everybody cried out against as unconstitutional. And what George Washington said is, we're worried about factional strife, which will...
No, I'm also... Let me put this worry on the table. If the potential for criminal liability is taken off the table, wouldn't there be a significant risk that future presidents would be emboldened to commit crimes with... abandon while they're in office? It's right now the fact that we're having this debate because OLC has said that presidents might be prosecuted. Presidents from the beginning of time have understood that that's a possibility. That might be what has kept this office from turning into the kind of crime center that I'm envisioning. But once we say, no criminal liability, Mr. President, you can do whatever you want, I'm worried that we would have a worse problem than the problem of the president feeling constrained to follow the law while he's in office.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree with that because the regime you've described is the regime we've operated under for 234 years. There has not been an expectation based on 234 years of unbroken political...
All right, let me ask you another question. Let me ask you another question about this clear statement line of questioning. First of all, I didn't see you argue that below. I don't know. I understand that you have that set of in your briefs here, but did you argue before the D.C. Circuit something about a clear statement with respect to statutes?
Yes. In our separately filed motion dismissed based on statutory grounds, we essentially argued not just this clear statement rule, but a whole panel.
Right, but that's not the question presented in this case. The question presented in this case comes out of your motion for immunity. So to bring in now an argument that you didn't raise below, it seems to me you forfeited it, no?
I believe it's fairly included within the question presented.
Why?
Yeah. That's lawyer speak for you fucked up. And he doesn't like it.
Okay. You have the legal brain, but you know, but you know, when I heard her argument, now.
Oh, she's not done. She's getting ready to deliver the coup de grace.
But she already said that. She already delineated why this is not appropriate. She just spelled it out. Like, you have to set bounds. We can't have this. And if you know anything about American history, we didn't want kings or monarchs or emperors.
And at another point in time, they got into the pardon of Richard Nixon. And, oh, wow, yeah, I mean, he needed to accept the pardon because, I hear my mother calling. Is that a squirrel? Here we go.
Actually, especially because the court expanded the question presented from what either of the parties submitted.
But not to statutory interpretation. I mean, that argument goes to statutory avoidance, constitutional avoidance, statutory interpretation. You asked for immunity, which is a totally different thing.
I think they're very closely related logically. You know, the question is does immunity exist and to what extent does it? And
logically, because, I'm Hacksaw Jack Sauer, and I'm real good at the logic thingy, and I'm sorry you're not logical, little lady there, but, you're a little lady, so you don't do the logic real good. Probably that time of the month or something.
Argument is, immunity at least exists to the extent that it raises a grave constitutional question that triggers the clear statement rule. That's a really
pathological But that's totally circular. You use that Uh-oh. Argument to avoid constitutional questions. You are asking us a constitutional question here. So it doesn't even make sense to talk Ow. About clear statement and rule the way that it's come up in the context of an immunity question. But let me ask you this.
I really want cameras in that courtroom because I would have loved to have seen the flop sweat flying off of Hacksaw Jack or the color Ooh. Rise in his cheeks when she said, "You're not making sense." Do we love her or what? And by the way, yeah, Steve in New York, am I going crazy-er? Steve said, "No, you're not. You're fine." That almost, the very beginning of this, almost sounded like the handmaid was teeing up Alex Jr. for KBJ to knock his block off. That's exactly what happened. I think they're becoming friends.
Well, they appreciate good argument.
Maybe the handmaid has figured out by being around these pasty-faced, doughy old men that they're awful. That they Roberts may be the chief justice, but Fappy and Bad Breath are running the show, and both of them despise women with every fiber of their being.
I don't understand John Roberts again. You know, he has to act like he's in charge. Number one, you're right about that. But these ladies here, like yesterday, it was shot, like, I know, I mean, I heard it on the news and everything, but I was listening live when Coney, when she was like, she almost, the way she said it, to me, it seemed like they'd already discussed this in private. Like, she was so
intense. They probably have.
So, you understand what I'm, she was like, but wait a minute, she said, "But that's not what you said." She said, "You'd already, where is this coming from?"
Understand, I mean, there's a very fundamental rule of appellate practice and procedure that mm-hmm. if you don't object to something or raise an issue in the courts below, you have, as KBJ said, forfeited your right to raise it before them. There's a fancy lawyer word for it. You are estopped. Estopped. You are estopped from raising it before
that's a
the
good
court.
Grab a word. Wait a minute. Estopped.
Estopped. Estopped. Estopped.
All right, that's a Scrabble word. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. If you can work a triple letter score. Or a double word score out of that, you can make your opponent just turn over their tiles.
Look, the police come over sometimes. We play Scrabble. I'm telling you, it gets raucous over here. Scrabble series business. Don't fuck around with them words. But
she's not done. She's not done.
And now you got more.
There's more. And Steve in New York is making a prediction, a 6-3 or 7-2 confirmation of the D.C. Circuit decision. I wish I was as sanguine as you on that, Steve. I do. I'm not. Because, remember, email me, okay? Tomorrow morning on our Filthy Morning Habit, whoever first brings up in the context of old Balls and Strikes Roberts, the word institutionalist absolutely gets the first ram-a-lama ding-dong of Friday on the Front Porch tomorrow. Because he's supposed to be this vaunted institutionalist, and as the CJ, he's supposed to be concerned with his legacy of his court, because, you know, we refer to courts by the name of the Chief Justice the way that Japanese imperial reigns are named after the emperor, for instance, the Meiji phase. or the Meiji era. Where did that come? What brain cell did I put that on? But I think he may cobble together a majority to kick the can down the road, and it may wind up very similarly resembling the Colorado disqualification decision. KBJ and the handmaid and Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan will all be going, "You assholes!" And in their little conference, the handmaid will say, "Do we have to call them assholes? Can't we? We're in charge of teaching America how to be civil." Because that's what she did in the Colorado case, right?
Yep.
When the Supreme Court did all that unnecessary, it was absolutely unnecessary for them to go there, but they went there anyway with its Congress must act horseshit.
Roxanne, the more I think about it, that is the most animated I've ever seen Amy Coney. Well, I mean, it just came out.
She's got her feet under her now. This is no longer her first or second. This is no longer her second term or her third term. This is her third or fourth, yeah, whatever term of court. She's figured out some shit. For all we know, by now, Fappy Thomas has gone up to her and asked her if she's ever seen a Long Dong Silver porn movie.
Come on. I know you didn't say that.
I did. I mean, that's the shit he did with Anita Hill.
Well, see, and
he's got a taste for the white women.
You know what? See, this is what the young people don't understand. Every time we hear Clarence Thomas, all I can think of is pubes. Every time I hear, I look at him, I'm like, that nasty ass pubes. Yeah.
And see,
pubes in the coke can.
He won't fuck with KBJ because, you know, she'll break a Coke bottle over his head and shank his ass.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Like, it's not, I mean, you know, people do what they want, I suppose. But when you definitely exclude a whole portion of the population, I think that's strange. Even if it's you, like people that look like you or people, that, I mean, whatever. To me, come on. Well, you know, the aliens come down, that shit will fucking disperse real quick. Dispatch of that shit. But, he's something wrong. He's a weirdo. He needs to go ahead and move on.
Well, just to get to my point, I think Roberts is going to try to cobble together a majority to kick the can down the road and say something about the difference between personal versus official immunity. Remand it back to the D.C. Circuit. The D.C. Circuit deals with it as quickly as they can, hands it back to Tanya Chutkan. Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers appeal it again back to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court takes another term.
But that's a delay, though.
Of course it's a delay. And there is a rule in place in appellate procedure, as well as criminal procedure, as well as civil procedure, that says you do not do things solely for the purpose of delay or harassment. And it's somewhere along the way, that is going to have to be deployed against these MFers.
Roxanne, since when did the highest court in the land care anything about the law?
Shut up. I say that in the kindest possible terms.
I know because it's like, you know what? It just, as you were talking, I was like, oh shit, this is exactly what all these people. You can't fool me. I'm interested in this. I watched these people in their interviews, which was in Congress when they were testifying. Every single one of these new folks. Oh, I believe in stare decisis. No, that's
settled
law.
Oh, I can't comment on that. That might be a case that comes before the court.
Oh, yeah, because my wife is
Roe versus Wade is a super precedent. Well, Roe versus Wade, the super precedent, got handed some fucking legal kryptonite a couple of summers ago.
This is why we can't. This is why, and they wonder, well, why are people so upset? What? Nobody likes this. I don't think anyone. I mean,
well, let's give Justice Jackson her due. By the way, Tracy reminds us all. Yeah. Don't forget.
Hi, Tracy.
Don't forget about KBJ. She black, but she clean, articulate, and well groomed.
Somebody had to say it. You know, you can't just think it.
Tracy, I bet she ain't ashy.
Stop it.
I'm sorry, I learned things. And I like to put them to use.
Yeah, but that's as bad as Donald Trump's do-rag.
And by the way, it's not going to be a goose egg. I just got a note from Jessica in the Greater Rochester, Minnesota Co-Prosperity Sphere, Metropolitan Co-Prosperity Sphere. And Jessica said, I had a less than stellar day at work, but I just laced up my Ride-L R3 Derby skates and about to get some roller therapy and a subsequent endorphin rush. Have a blast, Jessica. Getting a dose of Todd is a nice cherry on top of my happiness Sunday. And after I get home, I'll kick in $10 as I get paid by Spencer's tomorrow, and I need to put my smut money to good use. You purveyor of smut, Jessica. So that means Steve's challenge just got met. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you keeping us from being a goose egg. That gets us down to $1,780 in fundraising. All right, back to KBJ. She may very well deliver the coup de grace here.
About it. I had one more question. So what is the argument that the president of the United States, who you say is bound by the law, is not on notice that he has to do his job consistent with the law? I mean, to the extent that the clear statement rule comes in at all, it's about the person not being on notice. So I guess I don't understand why Congress, in every criminal statute, would have to say, and the president is included. I thought that was the sort of background understanding, that if they're enacting a generally applicable criminal statute, it applies to the president just like everyone else. So what is the clear statement that would have to be made in this context?
Under Franklin and under public citizen, Congress has to speak clearly before it interferes with the president's powers. And we have here an indictment that seeks to criminalize objective conduct that falls within the heartland of core executive authority.
Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Yeah, please let him up. He's had enough. But that was the moment, Todd, where my spidey sense went, yeah, because that's the Colorado case. Congress must act to make the president subject to the disqualification requirements of the 14th Amendment.
You are so good at picking people's mind and parsing out what is important in certain issues, because what you're talking about, I think we're on the same page with this. And that's what sparked me to send the email about the originalism. It seems like, I mean, you can nitpick all day long with the Constitution and the law. Well, it doesn't say specifically the president. It says officer, but it doesn't say president. Or, you see where I'm going with this?
I do. I mean, it is an absolutely ludicrous position to take. But you cannot defend Orange Julius Geezer without engaging in ludicrous acts of pettifogging.
That's the only defense. Because there is no defense.
I mean, ludicrous acts of pettifogging? I think that's Morning Joe worthy. That's right up there with dark sophistry. Well, I don't have the posh accent or anything, but with a hillbilly accent, ludicrous acts of pettifogging sounds pretty darned impressive, don't it?
I think it's more Samuel Clemens-esque.
Oh, well, thank you. That's very
kind.
Yeah,
I'm going to rack that up a notch. Yeah, I had to upgrade. You got the upgrade.
I did. I got the upgrade with no upcharge.
No upcharge. You got the continental breakfast, the mimosa, and the stale muffin.
Oh, I live for the stale muffin. You know I do. Shut up, you filthy-minded people. God damn it, I was trying so hard and almost made it to the end of the program.
No, but wait a minute. I was totally thinking about food. I was totally thinking, that's just funny as hell. I was thinking about, like, when you know you're like, oh, I got this. What is that? It starts with an O. Oscars or some low-cost. Not weird enough to know. It's all, you got the muffins and the bananas. It is like you think it's fresh. You get in the car, it's like, banana's good. Oh, shit. Oh, this muffin. They just put that out there. No.
I just had to go ahead and remark on it before I got a note from Matt in San Francisco or something. Tell us more about the stale muffins, Roxanne. Is there something else we need to know? You got another closet to come out of, honey?
Yeah, and then Chris is going to chime in.
Oh, God. Y'all quit encouraging each other. Daggum it. Oh, wow. Joan, thank you so much. We're not going to be at 1780 tomorrow. We're going to be we're going to be at 1580. Joan, I cannot thank you enough.
That's what's up.
That's huge. That's such a help. It takes such a weight off my mind. Thank you. And for everybody who tunes into the program, it takes a weight off their mind, too, because it means that, you know, we're close to make it through another month, y'all. Now, I did though, before we get done, I wanted to go back to the very beginning of the clip and sort of test Steve in New York's hypothesis to the effect that Justice Barrett teed up Alex Jr., by the way, Steve, ram-a-lama ding-dong for Alex Jr. Alex Jr. They're transing the frogs! But she teed up Alex Jr. for KB Jackson to park him in the cheap seats, which she did. Let's check one more time.
They haven't done a comprehensive review. I think this looks like all they did was text search for president in 18 U.S. Code. Again, under Franklin, that's a very telling indication that the word president is not in the statute. Isn't necessarily a magic word requirement, so to speak. But more fundamentally than that, they can see there are statutes that exist. In addition to that, much impeachment could occur as a result of private conduct. So the impeachment judgment clause does do significant work by authorizing the subsequent prosecution of a president there, because what the framers, if you look at what they're discussing in the thing, is in the Constitutional Convention, is principally
American
conduct, which of course we concede are not immune.
Okay, so just pick up Justice Kagan's example of a president who orders a coup. Let's imagine that he is impeached and convicted for ordering that coup, and let's just accept for the sake of argument your position that was official conduct. You're saying that he couldn't be prosecuted for that even after conviction and an impeachment proceeding, if there was not a statute that expressly referenced the president and made it criminal for the president.
There would have to be a statute that made a clear statement that Congress purported to regulate the president's conduct.
Okay, what? Thank you.
Justice Jackson?
No, man!
Yeah, she did. I mean, she teed him up on the ladies' tee. And that's another thing to take note of. You said that they had gotten together. You notice that she was building on a question Justice Kagan had asked?
Yep.
Sisters are doing it for themselves.
Hacksaw, you know, it just hit me. Like,
how would what they? Let me calm down. His delivery, his voice, that's a lot to ask of folks to concentrate on the content of his argument over his distracting ass, disgusting
almost,
voice.
Almost 3 hours. It was painful.
I'm not trying to be funny.
No, but the fact of the matter is, again, I come back to something I said earlier in the program, Todd. He got about a half an hour, and the rest of the time was spent chatting with, because apart from Sammy Bad Breath, nobody who admitted, wow, we're not talking about the particular facts of this case. No, I want to talk about anything but that. But it was, Counselor Dreeben was calm, cool, collected. He was very obviously competent.
Mm-hmm.
And he had the benefit of actually being able to rely on law and arguments that weren't, and I want to use a very, very precise legal term here, dumb as fuck.
Mm.
I mean, the arguments this guy is making would be laughed out of appellate procedure class in law school. The argument he's made, I mean, we could ask David in Oregon maybe tomorrow, because David in Oregon's in law school and probably learned a little bit about appellate practice, moot court, and that kind of thing.
Roxanne, I suspect that he's smart enough to understand that his deficient verbal delivery can act as a mask, as a mask to his bullshit ass arguments. Because you get lost in his, the arguments he's making, I'm telling you, I listen to that.
Why do you think they didn't come back to him? They'd had enough.
That's the funniest thing you fucking said on that. Why do you can't.
I mean, I think maybe the reason we don't have cameras in the Supreme Court and audio only is because, you know, with cases like Hacksaw Jack here. You got members of the court who are doing the whole Archie Bunker pantomimes committing suicide thing.
I go out there. I'm moving around in my seat. I'm like, damn, I couldn't listen to that motherfucker. Oh, hell no. He has to get one of those machines that would turn his voice into something smooth and
well, you know, speech therapy can help. I'm one of those people. Four terrifying words. The four words no one ever wants to hear Hacksaw Jack say. Hi, honey, I'm home.
Oh no!
Five more.
He's dying in the way.
Five more words. Oh, baby, you look hot.
come near my tiger. Give me a tiger rat.
It's like, dude, lay off the unfiltered Chesterfields.
Just sticking it in the hole in my throat. I gave you $500.
Okay. Wait. Now hold on. We're being mean, and I mean no disrespect to people who have had to deal with throat or laryngeal cancer or anything like that.
No, but he's a jackass.
Yeah, and you know what? Here, and him being a jackass confers immunity on the rest of us.
Right, he has freedom. Oh, God. Oh, I didn't know I was going to break up like that. But that something happened after it was like Griffey played the second time. I was like, oh, shit. This is what happened.
There's a dais there, and they can pass notes to each other without anybody seeing. And you know that, don't you ask him a fucking question. You hear? I can't take it.
Now, oh, shit. Now, everyone commented that Thomas left the court. Well, that may be a different case. I don't know. But he left the court for 10. Everybody knows he left the court, and he was falling asleep.
Well, okay, wait. See, this is why conversation radio is so important, Tom. Because
we
figure things out only after, you know, teasing out entire threads. And in this one, I just came up with the absolute best reasoning for a blanket opinion from 9 members of the Supreme Court saying he ain't got no immunity. You know what that reason is?
What?
Because if they do anything but that, there's a possibility they will have to hear him again.
What? That's how petty they are.
I mean, this ain't what would you do for a Klondike bar.
No.
This is what would you do not to ever have to hear this motherfucker again?
Oh, shit. Wait a minute. You might have said the most preposterous, funny thing, because it's true, of the whole for the next 12 months. Because this shit, I mean, it's funny on the surface, ha-ha, Saturday Night Live, ha-ha, I guess. However, if he does come, they have to show up to work. They got to sit there. They don't want to endure that again. Holy shit.
And by the way, I do. And Tracy says, they're saying this motherfucker. Only KBJ puts the extra stank on it, motherfucker.
You know, motherfucker.
She's got the Richard Pryor motherfucker.
Give me extra spank, motherfucker.
And by the way, a couple of notes coming in. First of all, Billable Rick. Then stop telling us not to encourage each other. Well, I'm the one who has to bear the brunt. Stale muffin, damn it. That voice, says Steve in New York, speech therapy by Lucky Strike. I know. Lee in New York said, stop it, Robin. Trump will go to the Supreme Court for everything, regardless. No, that's irregardless, Lee. But the thing is, the next petition, if he brings another, it's just like, no, we're not going to hear it. We decline to hear that case. We really decline to hear that case. We have heard enough.
Do you hear me?
And Mike in Cascadia, Kavanaugh comment, tuning in late to the last few moments today. I'll catch it on the podcast. Thanks, Mike. You might have mentioned this already, but did you catch Kavanaugh commenting that Ford's pardoning of Nixon was good for the country? I did. Isn't that pardon considered to be a mistake historically? Yeah, because in point of fact, you know, when Gerald Ford said, our long national nightmare is finally over, it was just beginning.
That wasn't as clean as it looked.
Yeah, Mike says, Nixon was never held to account, and that led to Reagan and Iran-Contra, and then Bill Barr and his shenanigans with H.W. Bush officials, and then the reign of error and all his crimes, and that whole steaming pile leads right to the biggest steaming pile, Trump.
Who said that?
Mike in Cascadia, who said, like Todd is saying right now, Kavanaugh is a jackass. Well, remember, again, Kavanaugh authored an opinion saying that a president could be charged with a crime because the president he was writing about was Bill Clinton.
Right. These people cannot be taken seriously. This is an unserious group of people now. Gorsuch said, well, I know you don't make much money, but you know what? When you just agreed to work for this company, you had to, that was your job. You had to stay with this load of whatever it is, and it's frozen, and it's cold, but that's too bad, and you had to stay there and freeze to death. That's what he said. Am I making that up?
No. And by the way, at least, I'm sorry, we've gone over a little bit. Thank you, George and Korsgold. Thank you so much. We are now down to only 15:45 to go to catch up and finish April to the good. Thank you, George. Thank
That's
you so
good.
Much.
Somebody pick in.
Jessica, well, Jessica and George and Joan, thanks for being there this evening. It is worth noting that we are not the only ones who are disgusted by the fact that Clarence Pubes on the Coke can, Fappy Thomas, was sitting there hearing the case today. Over at CNN, you know, Devin Cole said he's given no sign he's going to recuse. The executive director of the organization called Fix the Court, Gabe Roth, said, I think that's a fairly low bar. You think you're unbiased. Okay, tell us why. That he should at least explain why he's sitting there. Sheldon Whitehouse was pissed. He said he still never answered questions about what he knew about his wife's insurrectionist activities as he sat on cases directly involving those activities.
No, of course not. He's too busy sleeping and farting. And chasing white women to moonshine and cocaine. Oh, my God.
I know.
Well, no, Todd, you know what, though?
I've
got to have to say something.
Yeah, go ahead.
I know. It was about the Supreme Court. This is not exactly what I wanted to say, but, do they not see that folks are just not taking them seriously? And the fact that Thomas would not.
They don't care.
Recuse himself. Oh, I got it. Thank you for triggering me. Now I can say exactly what I wanted to say, because I was holding it in. You know, these people are going back to this Patriot movement stuff. It's big now. And you know what works, though? We're all human beings. And this is what we can do to fight back against Clarence Thomas. And they can't lock you up. They can't do a thing about it. Shame his ass and his disgusting wife. Shame them. They've already given us the evidence. We have the video of him
We need the shame nun from Game of Thrones, Hannah Waddingham. Shame. Shame.
I mean it.
Shame.
That's all we have. Shame them. We can shame them. And if you think about it, that's what comedy is in a way. What do you make fun of? You're shaming them.
I don't know if you caught it, but Vaughn Hilliard was reporting live from outside the Supreme Court today. And, of course, Capitol Police will, bust your ass. again, IOKIYAM.
I tried to smoke a joint one time, man. I swear to God, they acted like they were going to fucking throw me in the river.
Well, dig this, though.
I know.
So Vaughn Hilliard's doing his stand-up outside the Supreme Court, and there's some maggot over there screaming, fake news, fake news, fake news, fake news.
What?
Yeah, fake news. Trying to scream over Vaughn Hilliard's reporting.
Oh, yeah. Well, you see, we're back to that. That's what. All right. So now that we know what happened, and I know you're signing off, but you see, now that we know, we have legal things that don't, we have legal all these legal issues now that are actually factual because of depositions. Including what happened in Arizona with Mark Meadows and Epstein and these other folks and the previous people. And some of these people have already been sentenced. But I think some of these judges, part of their sentence, community service, should be testimonial videos. Yes, we did this and we lied and we were wrong. even if you only shave off, because, you know, we're only going to lose. I mean, we can't break through to more than, we can whittle it down to 25% of these Trump supporters, because some of them are just, they're so far in. 25, I think, is, that's generous. Now, the women, thank God for women. You know, number one, he ain't going to make it. You know, Trump ain't going to make it. But it's the women now with this, you know, this whole mishandling of women's issues, that's all we needed was 5%. And there's not that many people supporting. He's losing ground every day now. And, you know, he's so diminished, like I was saying yesterday. You know, when I said beat up him, well, not yesterday, you know, the day before yesterday, he is beat up and he is diminished in character, stature, and potency. Just as some people who called in earlier, you know, they said he looked old, he sounded, yes, of course he does. That's what I was saying earlier. You know, going to court, being in court all day for one day, that's a job. Yeah, I'm telling you. I've been there. It will change your fucking life. And that just one count, one felony will change. Listen, if you haven't been there, you don't know. And I want to know how you even got a cell phone in there. You're not supposed to have a cell phone in the courtroom. Unless you're a lawyer or, you know, prosecution, you're not supposed to have any telephonic devices in the courtroom because he can take pictures of the witnesses. He had a cell phone with him one time. These are things I don't understand, but, and I know you got to go, but I don't understand. We've seen enough from this character, and because it's stochastic terrorism and such, he should be detained now. He should be in house arrest with no internet. He has demonstrated time and time again he is not responsible. You know, he is just he needs help. He needs to, his people need to put him in the institution of his choice, and all his people who like him, they can go and visit him and rally around him, and they can leave us the fuck alone because we got a country to run. And it's that fucking simple.
And just to put a bow on the whole thing as we, and, you know, I owed some time from yesterday anyway, so maybe this makes up for a little bit of it. Matt Gaetz, who himself appears to have a predilection for paying underage girls for sex.
Oh, God.
Has said, and this was yesterday, he sent an email to constituents. As I noted in my last post, one congressman or even a more united House of Representatives can only do so much. Congress cannot issue pardons to January 6th defendants, for example. Only presidents can do this. And so he went on and said, the most critical thing for these defendants we can do is re-elect Donald Trump in 2024. He has promised pardons, and he will keep that promise. That's a reminder that Matt would like to have one of those, too. A Trump DOJ could also get to the bottom of prosecutorial misconduct and improper surveillance and could provide money settlements. I have a feeling that that occurred to him when he saw the $139 million settlement for the young women who were sexually assaulted and sexually abused by a man after Matt Gaetz' own heart, you know, Dr. Larry Nassar.
That piqued his interest, didn't it?
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's not looking well. I saw him on the floor the other day on TV. He was very, he looks like a vampire. He's kind of pale. Like, how do you live in Florida and you're pale?
Dude, he stays, by his own admission, he stays up all night snorting rails of crushed up Viagra and chasing it with Red Bull so he can fuck all night.
Oh.
That shit will wear you out.
All right, so he wants to be Charlie Sheen. Okay.
Jesus, he's good disgusting.
God. I know. What are we doing with these people? Why are we here? How did we get here?
Well, it's kind of like what Mike in Cascadia said a little bit ago. Nixon gets pardoned. That leads to Reagan and Iran-Contra. That leads to George H.W. Bush and Bill Barr to prosecution and pardoning everybody that had anything to do with Iran-Contra, which leads to George W. Bush and you know, the illegal war on Iraq, you know, that kind of thing, the stolen election, the one that really was stolen in 2000 that the Supreme Court got him out of. And as Mike said, and that whole steaming pile leads right to the biggest steaming pile, Trump. How did we get here? We got here because Gerald R. Ford, sit, Liberty, sit.
Yeah,
pardoned
Mike is right.
Richard like Milhouse me. Pinhead Nixon.
Yep.
And just,
you know,
kind of late.
Yeah, because that was at the end of Vietnam. After he lied about Vietnam, we could have been out of there, but he lied about it. He lied. I'm sorry, but yeah.
Oh,
you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, and cowbell for Irish Dave. Lucky Strikes pack used to read LSMFT, which meant Lucky Strike means fine tobacco. Now it translates to let's stop motherfucking talking. May it please the court.
No.
But one last thing, late breaking.
No.
Apparently, the conventional wisdom now is that, oh dear God, headline from NBC News, Supreme Court signals further delay in Trump election interference case as it weighs immunity.
Yep.
And there we are.
Because it's a complicated issue. Yeah, they got to really, get the slide rule out. They can't figure that out.
So it'll go back to the D.C. Circuit. The D.C. Circuit will fold, spindle, and mutilate it. Hacksaw Jack will turn around and appeal it back to the Supreme Court. They'll say, no, motherfucker, no, because this is procedurally, this is very much like the way the Alabama redistricting case went. And they'll say no, and he'll say yes, and they'll say we said no, and he'll say, yeah, but I got to. And maybe there will be enough people to hear him again. And by that point in time, you know, the goal here is to allow Donald Trump to be tried 15 seconds after the sun burns out.
Yep.
Any questions?
So
I got to get out of here, Todd. I do.
This may be
one for the ages. Everyone who
everyone
who witnessed this was a witness to history today.
It was painful.
I don't know if it's like the where were you when Kennedy was killed or where were you on 9/11, but it feels like it only with the banality of pettifogging.
Mm-mm-mm. Well, thank you, and good evening.
Todd, you take care, my friend. Have a good evening. Glad you liked the barbecue.
You too. That's what I was thinking about. I didn't want to bring it up, but damn. Is it as good as it looks? Because it looks like you just got that sucker right. Like
I put those silicone barbecue mitts on, and I went to pick it up off the grill and put it on the platter. It fell apart in it fell apart in my hands.
Did you have any like Kaiser roll, any kind of bread?
Oh God, yes, yeah. I went and got brioche buns for it.
That's what I'm calling shit.
I'm not putting my barbecue on no Wonder Bun.
But that's the first. I was like, ooh, I need a nice, fresh Kaiser Cuban roll. Cut it.
Oh, man, I griddle toasted those things.
That shit was good.
And I took barbecue sandwiches around to my friends, and they were like, Why don't you just get a food truck?
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I mean, that's all you have to do is put that on the side of the food truck. People will be driving from Memphis they'll be coming over there like, oh yeah, we could pass him for. I'm really, seriously, that shit.
I mean, Roxanne's butts.
It's better than that stale muffin.
Stop with the stale muffin. Goodbye, Todd. Have a good night. Our buddy Todd down in South Carolina, Stan. Today felt momentous. I wish I felt better about the momentous that this day was, but I do not. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thanks to our challenge makers, our respondents to challenges. Ralph's challenge got met, so I should know. So we're down to not 1545. We are down to 1495. $14.95. Low, low price, $14.95. Thank you so much, Joan. Thank you, Jessica. Thank you, George. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live, who said he had his lunch extra early today, so I couldn't ruin it. Smart man. If you're a podcast member of the Horn Family Community Congregation, please take a moment to like each episode on whatever podcast platform you use. Subscribe to a couple of them so that, like, when Apple Podcasts screws up, you'll still get notification of new episodes. Leave a comment here and there because it helps people find the program. And we want more people in this conversation, don't we? We want more people to get out so far ahead of the curve it's like being on Straight Road. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. The reminder continues. If there's something at White Rose you want to download, do it now, because after more than a quarter century of almost single-handedly saving progressive talk on the Internet, Ben's hanging up the White Rose for drying on June the 1st. Thank you, Ben, for all you've done. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, 25 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia, and a proud union shop. Please stay safe. Take note of when it's time for your next booster. Wear your masks if you're around the maggots. I mean, you could get something that could make you sound like Hacksaw Jack. Nobody wants that. Wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer, carry it with you, pocket or purse. Maintain your social distance still. It's still a good idea. And, you know, if Hacksaw Jack comes towards you grunting and of course the president could order someone to be assassinated if that was an official act. Avoid Hacksaw Jack like the plague, because he is. And as soon as I'm done here, I'm going to have to go and gargle salt water or, I don't know, absinthe or something. Huh. Alex Jones and Hacksaw Jack are rough on a girl's throat. And always, 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 Wayne and Gina, it's all for you. Later.